In a year that has been so improbable, the impossible has happened.
A shot on Elo. Good! The Bulls win it!
You know what time it is.
The most amazing, sensational, dramatic.
Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James with the rejection!
Holy cow! Oh my God! I don't believe it! It just continues!
Excellence.
Oh. Welcome back into another episode of the Sports Hour. This is Mitch Mo.
And this is Dallin. Guys, welcome back in. It is good to be here, Mitch. It is Wednesday, my dudes. We are recording this on November 9th, it is a Wednesday evening, and we've got a fun show ahead of us. Mitch, I've been looking forward to this all week because we've got, for our NFL segment, our midseason awards. And I love doing midseason awards. You got to do it in week 9 now because there's 18 weeks and 17 games. And so, you know, you never get a time where it's like fully, you know, even with the wins and losses, but this is about as halfway as it gets. Through the midseason awards today, not just like the regular awards, but some of our own awards that we'd be giving out for the first half of the season. So very excited for that. I've been thinking about these, stewing over this all weekend throughout the games and early this week. Very excited to share our thoughts on this one. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, that'll be a very fun segment. It's always one that we get to look back on the previous years and see how wrong we were. We get to look back on these come the end of the year when the awards actually come out and see how wrong we were. So it's just a great time of year for us to be wrong, but have some fun about it at the same time.
Yeah,
we got the campus tour. We got a wild week in college football. We got to go over. We got a new World Series champion that both you and I are not happy about. We have a NASCAR champion. We got some NFL, NBA news. Dallin, this is going to be a loaded show. Before we get going, though, I would be remiss, and I think the Sports Hour listeners would all be remiss if we didn't congratulate you on your new position at KSL.
Yes.
Great new opportunity for you. We're all excited and happy for you.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. I started this week the promotions director for the KSL Sports Zone, KZNS, our sports radio station here in Salt Lake City. Very excited to be full-time sports radio on the promotions and marketing side, and have plans down the road to be contributing more in content. But it's good. You know, it feels good. We're making things happen. You know, and I appreciate the shout out, buddy.
Yeah, absolutely, pal. Well earned.
Hey, yay. That's all we do. All we do is put in that work, you know. We're out here grinding. We're in these streets, Mitch, and we're hunched over. We're spitting out teeth. And we're spitting out blood. And we're putting in, we got dirt on our knees. I got calluses in places that shouldn't have calluses. And that's what you got to do to make it, you know.
Everybody won't be great. Nobody wants to put the work in.
Exactly.
Grinders. Exactly.
Just like Betsy Ross said. So that's what we're here doing. And it's a beautiful time. So
Blake, great.
All right. I'm pumped now. I'm pumped.
Yeah. You psyched?
You feeling it? You ready?
I'm feeling it. Let's get
into
it.
I'm munching on some mixed nuts. You know, it's a good evening.
Well, how about you put those nuts in your mouth and let's get into the news, huh?
Is that what we're doing? All right, sure. Why not? I'm going to, you know what? Yeah, because you said it. I'm going to eat.
Let's get into the news and notes around the world of sports. Let's get into the news. Salty? Salty? Yeah.
The salty nuts.
As but nutritious.
You know.
That's right.
And a good, healthy snack, you know.
That's right.
grown by great people, you know, as we know. Mitch, let's start the news off. I really did eat some nuts, and now I got like nuts in my mouth. You know, I got the lingering nuts in the teeth. It's a whole thing. Anyway, Mitch, let's just
shout out Sanrio almonds. Ammons.
Exactly. Shout out the Sanri Ammons. Yes, Mitch, NFL news. We had a head coach firing from the past weekend that I found very surprising. Not because the team was having success by any means, but I guess if you looked at the pulse of the NFL in the beginning of the season, you would not have suspected that this guy would be the second coach gone here in November. But Frank Reich, the now former Colts head coach, let go by the organization on Monday following what's been a very disappointing start to this season and one of the worst offensive performances, like definitely the worst offensive performance of the season that the Colts had on Sunday. So the news was announced. Frank Reich's gone. He is out. He was 40-33-1 in the regular season as the head coach of the Colts. But what started as a first couple good years has not really panned out. And, you know, ultimately, I think Frank Reich sealed his fate with the Carson Wentz decision. You know, I listened to a great podcast this week on the Athletic football show. With their Colts insider and kind of shedding light on the situation. And Frank Reich obviously was a big proponent for bringing in Carson Wentz last year to be the guy. So much so that he was like the only person. Jim Irsay, the owner, Chris Ballard, the GM, were not on board. It's Frank Reich, and he said, I want to stick my neck out for this guy because I think he can do it. And when it didn't work out, and they moved on from him, his fate was sealed. That decision had been made, and it had failed, and thusly, Frank Reich had failed. So perhaps it was inevitable by the end of the season that he would be let go. But I am surprised, Mitch, that it happened now, and I wonder, what's the incentive on letting him go in early November? Like, what does this grant you now as an organization that you wouldn't have had if you just let him go at the end of a disappointing season in January, right? I mean, I wonder if the rewards of letting him go now and doing what they are going to do, which we'll get into who the interim head coach is going to be, because that's a whole other thing. I want to talk about Reich first. But besides that, like, what are the incentives of letting him go now? I don't know. I'm very perplexed by that.
You know, I've had some time to chew on this, and you and I talked on Monday, and we had a conversation about this firing. And my initial response was, I'm not shocked. I'm not shocked. There was the whole Carson Wentz debacle. You just said right there, his fate was sealed with that. You have to imagine that the decision to bench Matt Ryan for Sam Ehlinger, he had to have had a role in that. To some capacity.
That was a Jim Irsay call through and through. Jim Irsay even said so himself. It was his decision to start Sam Ehlinger and to bench Matt Ryan, which makes this firing even more confusing because you made him start this guy and then he sucks. And now you're like, you gotta go.
Sure. But, you know, like you said, in your words, his fate was sealed after the Carson Wentz debacle. The only sense that I can make of this is that, you know, they're 3-5-1, rough start to the year. Yeah, it was at 2.5 games behind the Titans right now in that division. It's still anyone's division, really. It's early enough in the year where we could see something happen with the Colts or even the Jaguars. The Titans, they don't have this division locked up in any, you know, in any sense of the term. You know, they're still getting outscored by their opponents. So maybe they thought a fresh face, a fresh start might revamp that team, bring up morale. But that makes the interim head coach even that much more confusing as to why they would choose him to take over the team.
Yes. And so let's talk about that now, because that is sort of almost the bigger story here. And I think that's the problem with all of this, Mitch, is that the bigger story isn't that they've let go of their head coach. The biggest story is that who they've brought in is a head coach in Jeff Saturday, former Colts center, revered in Indianapolis, one of the, you know, icons of a franchise. People love him. He's well respected, all that. He has zero head coaching or any coaching experience at the NFL or collegiate levels. Zero. Assistant, coordinator, fucking holding a clipboard, like nothing. He has zero. Now, he played in the NFL. I'm not like not taking that away from him, but coaching wise, his best experience is at the high school level. And now he was coming in mid-season to take over an actual NFL franchise. No, this isn't a Netflix show. This isn't like fucking Ted Lasso. Like, this is a real thing. And I think that's the problem, is that Jim Irsay thinks this is a good idea. Jim Irsay thinks that this is a good idea as an owner of this NFL franchise to bring in somebody who is just clearly not qualified to come in the middle of the season. Mitch, they have the quarterback assistant coach is going to be the offensive play caller on Sunday. They did not have an offensive play caller till Tuesday, because Jeff Saturday can't call plays because he's not even a head coach. Like, what is he? The more I've sat with this, the less sense it's made, Mitch. I don't know what to make of this. I think this is truly absurd.
It is. It is. Like, I understand Jeff Saturday is well respected, a football guy through and through, right? You played center in the NFL. You must know a lot about football. You have to, sure. Right?
Absolutely.
It doesn't take away anything from the fact that, you know, that he doesn't have any coaching experience, a one-time high school football coach. This makes me think, Dallin, that we probably would have had this same reaction had Josh McCown gotten the Texans job.
100%.
He was a finalist for that job as a high school football coach, and that was it.
Yeah, if you listen to this podcast, you've heard my pushback to that. Just the idea of that is absurd, to bring in a guy with no experience as your head coach. And Jim Irsay did it mid-season. Like, he didn't even give him a chance to field a coaching staff full of competent, like, coaches to help him out. Like, he's going on the fucking fly here. And the thing is, Mitch, is they had John Fox on the coaching staff. They have Gus Bradley on the coaching staff. Those are guys with NFL head coaching experience who could have taken over the franchise on Monday and ran the ship fine. You would have never thought about it. And listen, if you sucked this year, that's probably better for you. You need a future quarterback. It's sure shit not Sam Ellinger. So you probably want to lose. But bringing in Jeff Saturday is a farce, Mitch. It is simply a farce.
Look, let's not forget that the Irsay family, going back to his father, Robert, has a track record of making these wild and crazy decisions.
Yes.
Let's not forget, Irsay is the one that packed him up in the middle of the night. They ditched Baltimore for Indianapolis. They have a track record. And Jim Irsay, for a long time, seemed like he's like, okay, this is the better version of what Irsay management's going to look like. And then he does something crazy like this, and you're like, oh, crap, he's turning into Senile Bob. Like, he's turning into Bob Irsay. And it's scary for the Colts organization, I think.
It is. I've been a person who has bought in on the Colts since we started this podcast. Every season I'm bought in on the Colts because they have been one of the better franchises. They've been run really well, and they've developed a great roster, and the coaching has been good.
Chris Ballard's been fantastic as that GM.
Chris Ballard has been fantastic, but now all of a sudden the flaws are showing. Mitch, as great as Chris Ballard has been, they built their team on the backs of a running back, a guard, an off-ball linebacker. These are not valuable positions. These are not game-changing positions, and we're seeing that because those players aren't game changers. Shaq Leonard can't help that defense that much by himself, you know? Quentin Nelson doesn't help that offensive line that much. That offensive line is horrible. So at a certain point, there's a lot of people to blame, and this decision is not going to help. I wish Jeff Saturday all the best. I'm not rooting for him to lose in this situation, but this is just absolutely absurd. And I don't even have any more words. I don't know what to make of this. This is crazy. So
yeah, it's I'm at a loss now too, man. I think we got it out of our system. So
you know, listen, if you're trying to tank for a great draft pick, this might be the best way to do it, huh?
Just bring some random guy midseason and be like,
hey, if we lose 8 games, who cares?
Here's the question: if the Colts win their next 3 and they're 6-5-1 in 3 weeks, like, do we change our tune about Jeff Saturday, or do we still feel the same?
I mean, listen, Jim Irsay is either an idiot or a genius. That's just how this goes. It's a bold decision to make at this point in your, you know, ownership and then the season to make a call like this. But yeah, I mean, if it works, he's a genius and Jeff Saturday was the right pick. And oh my God, Jim Irsay, how did he have the foresight to know this guy was it? I mean, but like, it's either
that's a
that
good point.
Or it's a flop and you're an idiot. You know, it's like,
that's a good point to bring up. Like, we're not bashing Jeff Saturday. We're bashing the decision by Jim Irsay.
100%. Exactly. Again, yeah. No, like, I'm not rooting for Jeff Saturday to fail. I hope he does well. I hope it works out for him. But
this is simply
he's just not the guy qualified for this job. And good luck to the Colts. Yeah. Tough. Like you said, tough time to be a Colts fan. Oh, man. You had Peyton Manning and Andrew Luck for a very long time, and you felt very secure. And oh man, has that changed in the last couple of years?
They should still have Andrew Luck, but you know.
You know, I mean, that's just wild. So, Mitch, let's jump to the NBA for our bit of NBA news here, and that is surrounding the Brooklyn Nets and their new head coach. We discussed a couple weeks ago at this point that they had let go of Steve Nash, and that there were rumors that they had planned to bring in former Celtics head coach Ime Udoka, who's currently serving his year-long suspension from that franchise for the allegations, workplace allegations that he was facing. Well, they didn't bring in Ime Udoka, Mitch. The Nets announced today that they hired Jacques Vaughn as the head coach. He had been serving as the interim head coach this season. It comes with a deal through the 2023-2024 season. So it's not just to like finish out this season. He's got another year tacked on to the end of this, but he will take over as the now full-time head coach for the Nets. And listen, this is the report from ESPN that the Nets backed off the initial plan to hire Udoka based on several factors, including the controversy, the anti-Semitism controversy surrounding Kyrie Irving. And how could you bring in Ime Udoka's facing his own trauma while you've got Kyrie Irving, you know, drawing up his own trauma at the same time? Again, we talked about this a couple weeks ago. That was even before all the anti-Semitic stuff and the Kyrie stuff. Just having Kyrie on the team is questionable enough to bring in other questionable characters. I think this is a good hire. This is a smart hire, Mitch, and I just didn't think the Nets were going to do it. They seemed destined to make another bad, flashy move that was just not going to pan out. And here they made a smart, wise decision, sticking with a guy that's not sexy, but is going to be best for your franchise.
I'm glad they made this decision. Like, stop trying to make the move that's going to sell you tickets and try to put together a good product on the court. I think this was probably the better of the two moves. In fact, I'm confident in saying that this is the better of the two moves. Jacques Vaughn, looking back on his history as a head coach, he was a head coach for the Orlando Magic from 2012 to 2015. Those were really lean years in Orlando. So the coaching record doesn't necessarily reflect maybe what kind of talent this guy has on the bench as a head coach. So, It's the best case scenario, I think, for the Nets to bring in a guy that was with Steve Nash, that is familiar with the system and the organization, and not bring in a guy that you said comes with a ton of baggage and has not been a part of what the Nets have been trying to do over the last 3 or 4 years. So a best move possible, I think, for Brooklyn.
Yeah, absolutely. I think they made the right move here. You know, former player Vaughn had a nice NBA career, as you said, prior head coaching experience. Interim for the Nets, actually, previously in the 2019-2020 season, he served as the interim head coach for 10 games that season. So Had already done now twice the interim, now the full-time head coach for the Brooklyn Nets.
And we'll been a playoff coach.
Yeah.
He coached that first round. Coach. I mean, they got swept, but, you know.
But, hey, there you go. I like it. So he's got playoff experience, what you're saying. I like
there
it.
There we go. That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
You love to see it, Mitch. Let's jump over to the MLB postseason. As you mentioned in our intro, we have a World Series champion. And unfortunately for everyone outside of Houston, it is the Houston Astros. Astros win the World Series over the Phillies in six games. We both picked the Phillies in this one. Astros got it done in Houston in game six. And listen, we talked last week. Philly was up. They were tied in the series, right? If I remember right.
They were up 2-1
at that point. They were up 2-1. And obviously we felt very good about the prospects for Philadelphia. But after that point, three straight wins for the Astros. And I mean, really, Mitch, what it comes down to in those last three games and really throughout this series late in particular was the pitching and the lack of bats for the Phillies. The Phillies had ridden hot bats and namely Bryce Harper throughout this postseason. But, you know, you look at those last three games after securing the 2-1 lead, zero runs in game four, two runs in game five, one run in game six for the Phillies. And that's just not going to cut it in the World Series.
No, I mean, the most important, stat of that game four is they were no hit. They were no hit in that game four. So, outscored, 12-3 over the last three games. Bats went quiet for Philly. Astros pitching, they clearly adjusted after that game three loss, tipping pitches. Mm-hmm. But Philly was just all over them. They made good adjustments. To their credit, they made good adjustments on the mound and found a way to silence Philly's bats. But, you hate to see it. You hate to see the Astros get another World Series championship, become a dynasty. You hate to see all of it. It leaves a bad taste in your mouth. It leaves a bad taste in your mouth because, you know, you felt good about this Phillies team. You felt so good about them. That David was going to beat Goliath and they looked to be ahead. And then it just fell apart in the end, man. Just fell apart.
Yep. It is unfortunate, but you know, you got to listen. The one positive out of this shout out Dusty Baker. You know, we love Dusty, and listen, he was put in an impossible situation for the team that people hated. But he did a great job in Houston. He gets, you know, the World Series ring here, and he will be back next season as the manager. That was announced, I think, today that he will return. So we love that for Dusty, and don't love that for Houston, but you know, that's okay.
I heard this on a Barstool podcast. I believe it was Starting Nine, their baseball podcast, and they made a really good point of just how big of a baseball guy Dusty is. Like, that last out was made, and managers are so particular about taking their notes and making their notes down and writing whatever it was. While everyone's rushing the field, Dusty's still just sitting there writing his final note on his card and then puts it in his back pocket, and then he goes out. Like, wow, what a baseball guy move. Just like, no, the job's not finished until the last note is made. And to all of Dusty's credit, man, a great thing for him. We've seen him in the bigs for a long time, get close many times. A lot of people remember that 0-2 Giants team and how close they were. Good for Dusty. Good for Dusty.
100%. 100%. Mitch, NASCAR update for the folks. We had the final race this weekend in Phoenix, and we have our NASCAR champion for 2022.
We do. It's Joey Logano. Joey Logano is going to get it done and win a cup title, his second cup title in his career. Started on the pole, brought it home. He actually led a very good part of the race. He led a race high 187 laps, looked to be untouchable in that first stage. His teammate Ryan Blaney comes home in second. Ross Chastain is going to finish second in the points. The long shot, the guy that got in on a miracle pass, the video game move, he finishes third after starting 25th in the field. He scrapped and clawed his way up into a top five. Chase Briscoe fourth, Kevin Harvick comes home fifth, Byron, Busch, Hamlin, Larson, and Bell round out your top 10. Look, I'm not a big Joey Logano fan. he's what I like to call a silver spoon kid. You know, it seems like he's just, not that he hasn't worked to be where he's at, but he's had a lot of other opportunities that maybe other guys haven't had, kind of the Austin Dillon effect. But you know what? He raced well all year long, and he deserves to be in this position. He deserves to be a champion. Much deserved. As much as Chastain has really ruffled a lot of feathers this year with his hyper aggressive driving style and kind of creating a lot of rivalries on track, a little bummed that we didn't get to see him hoist the trophy at the end of the year. That would have been a fantastic scene. A guy that seems like he's got maybe not talent wise, but as far as impact on track and the theatrics of it, a little bit of Dale Earnhardt-esque with his aggressive style. Would have liked to see that happen, but you know, Logano, well deserved. Yeah, a great run for him all year long, and he's the one with the big check and the big trophy at the end of the year.
Yeah, there you go. Crazy NASCAR season. Love the way that it came down, all the drama building up, and as you said, Joey Logano getting it done, and second championship in his NASCAR career.
Second of his career. Now we just got to look forward to February 5th, Dallin. The Busch Clash at the L.A. Coliseum. It's coming back. They're going to run the Busch Clash again. And at the L.A. Coliseum at that little quarter-mile track. And yep. So that'll be a ton of fun come February.
All righty. Just 3 months away. We'll look forward to it. And we'll miss the NASCAR updates, I guess, on the podcast from here on out. We got a couple of month hiatus and then we'll be back, right?
I mean, I remember how it started. It started with the Busch Clash and how exciting that was. Right. So,
that's true. You know, been a recent thing. So, yeah.
So we'll be back. We'll be back. We're just going to have to.
Yeah.
3-month hiatus. It'll be back.
A winter vacation, and then we'll be back in February. Mitch, let's jump to the campus tour. Let's start with a week 10 recap, and let's start this off with the biggest game of the weekend, number 1 Tennessee at number 3 Georgia, and the Bulldogs taking care of business over Tennessee 27-13. And this game wasn't really particularly close. Georgia led 24-6 at halftime. Tennessee added a touchdown late, but that score is not indicative of this game. I mean, this was domination by Georgia, and surprising to me. I mean, I picked Georgia in our picks. You picked Tennessee. I picked the Bulldogs because, you know, the talent and were defending national champions, but I did not think that they would dominate Tennessee the way that they did. And this Tennessee offense that has been literally unstoppable all season. And Hendon Hooker was looked pedestrian. Jalen Hyatt wasn't able to have the big impact that he was. Cedric Tillman back in this game, big addition for Tennessee, but even with him, in the lineup, nothing going in the run game, nothing going in the pass game, nothing going at all in Georgia with an impressive win here at home.
Speaks volumes to how good this Georgia defense still is. I mean, just volumes. This Bulldogs defense is, there's a reason we talk about it being the best in the country, is because it just shut down one of the most prolific offenses in the country. Like, we knew Tennessee, like, Georgia's offense, it's fine. It's not going to be flashy and score a ton of points. But we know also how bad Tennessee's defense really is. Like, they're pretty one-dimensional, and they got exposed. You shut down the offense, and you play good enough defense, and or you play good enough offense against Tennessee, and you play that same stout defense that you can and are capable of doing, and you'll be right in this ball game. So, an impressive win for the Bulldogs. Not, you know, the huge upset, but it's still very, very impressive what Georgia did on the field on Saturday.
Yeah, absolutely. And significant when it comes to the college football playoff and when it comes to the SEC, Mitch, as, Georgia, Tennessee were the final two contenders in the SEC East to earn that berth in the SEC championship game. This drops Tennessee, obviously, with their first loss, but gives Georgia that advantage. So Georgia now in the power position. To make a return to the SEC championship game, put themselves in a position, obviously now to be a contender for the college football playoff. Tennessee's going to have some work to do and need some help to make that happen. Let's talk about the other SEC matchup, Mitch. This one's a tough one for you, but LSU upsetting Alabama. And listen, I want to start this off eating some crow, because I got on this podcast last week and ripped the playoff committee for basically handing Alabama a free opportunity to move up the rankings by shooting LSU up the rankings very high and giving them this top 10 matchup. And I basically said that Bama was going to trounce them and that this was all for show. This was all for Alabama. But I mean, LSU proved me wrong. That's for damn sure, Mitch. Number 10 LSU beat number 6 Alabama 32-31 in Death Valley in what was one of the best games we've had this season in college football. Low scoring affair in the first half. LSU led 7-6 at halftime. The fourth quarter is where the magic happened. Just score after score after score. Alabama kicks a field goal to tie it at 24, send it to overtime. Alabama scores on their offensive possession. Jaden Daniels scores a touchdown on the first play of the LSU offensive possession in overtime, 25-yard touchdown run. The Tigers and Brian Kelly go for two, convert the two-point conversion to end it right there in the first overtime and get the win. A gutsy call, a gutsy win by LSU. And again, I was just wrong. I thought LSU was not that good. I thought Jaden Daniels was okay. I thought Jaden Daniels was okay, Mitch. I was not impressed with him at Arizona State. I met him at Pac-12 Media Day last year. He came off, I don't know. I didn't get the best vibe from him. And maybe that was the Arizona State thing, because things didn't really work out at ASU. We know what happened with Herm Edwards. I mean, there's a lot of things there. But he's been fantastic for LSU this year. He really has been. He's been that guy when he was recruited and went to ASU. He was a highly touted kid, a lot of potential running ability. There was a lot of thought that Jaden Daniels was going to be something, and he never really accomplished that in Arizona State. But, man, a signature win for LSU, a signature win for Jaden Daniels, and a signature win for Brian Kelly. Mitch, he beat Nick Saban. I mean, that's crazy, crazy what happened.
Alabama is so bad against run option. They're so bad. Hendon Hooker did it to him. Jalen Daniels has now done it to him. And you watch, and they just the edges collapse every single time. No one stays home. And all they got to do, ride that handoff, ride it, pull it, and the edge is there. It was frustrating to watch that. And you know what? Credit to the LSU Tigers. They exposed what Bama's defense is not good at defending, and they took advantage of it. It's not like Jalen Daniels lit the place up with his arm. It was really his legs that did the most damage. And it's frustrating as an Alabama fan to watch a defense that you know can be so good, and they have that one thing that they can't do well, and somewhat they just keep exploiting it over and over and over again. I was kind of with you last week. I thought this was a free top 10 victory, and I took the lock.
Yeah, you locked the line. It was a pretty big line for Alabama.
13.5. It was 13.5. I locked the line, and you know, I don't have much to take away from this other than Alabama got exposed. And you know what? If they want to stay a two-loss team and at least give themselves a shot to be in the SEC championship game, which right now they're going to have things happen. They're going to have to beat Ole Miss. Mm-hmm. LSU has the tiebreaker over them. If they go to lose to Ole Miss, it's over. They lose to Ole Miss, it's over. And even if they beat Ole Miss, things are still going to happen for them to get into that title game. It's just, man, for a team that had so much high hopes, right now 7-2 feels like a huge disappointment.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy to say that. As you said, they're still ranked in the top 10 of the college football playoff rankings, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But, I mean, their playoff hopes are pretty much dashed at this point. Now, will they likely still be a New Year's Six team? Of course, right? But are they going to be playing in the Cotton Bowl against the G5 team that gets the berth? Probably. And that is, playing Tulane in the Cotton Bowl is certainly not what you had your hopes for if you were a Crimson Tide fan heading into this season with the reigning Heisman winner and Bryce Young. And this is certainly not on Bryce Young. He was great as always and shows what makes him special. This is an Alabama team that just doesn't look like Alabama teams. The penalties, Mitch, 9 penalties in this game. This was the problem with the Tennessee game.
Undisciplined.
We talked about this with the Tennessee loss. It was, wow, how many penalties did they have in that game? And you saw it again here this week. That offensive line is frankly just not good for an Alabama team that recruits so well and it has a history of great offensive linemen. This is not a great unit right now. And when these guys get more experience, they'll probably be great down the road. But right now, this is not a good offensive line. And I mean, this Bama team has clear flaws. And like you said, LSU exposed them.
It's so unlike a Nick Saban led team to be this undisciplined.
Yep.
Like even when he was at LSU, when he was at Michigan State, like really well-disciplined teams. And throughout his tenure in Alabama, very well-disciplined. This is just, it's very uncharacteristic. And it just seems like it's one of those years where things just don't go right. They just don't go right.
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely. Mitch, the last game we want to talk about from this past week, probably the biggest upset. We'll choose another upset later on our best upset of the week, but, probably the biggest upset, Notre Dame over Clemson. Mitch, at one point, Notre Dame led in this game in the fourth quarter, 28-0. They had shut out the Tigers through three quarters. Game ends 35-14, but this was not even really that close. Notre Dame just took care of business in South Bend against a Clemson team that at that point had not looked very good this year, but had been 8-0, and so they remained in the top five and remained one of those top teams. And obviously we had questions about DJ Uiagalelei. He was benched for Klubnik, and who was going to start there? What was this team? The defense is good, but what is this offense? Oh, the defense wasn't great in this game against what has been a very up and down Notre Dame team. The offense turns the ball over twice, can't even get 300 yards. DJ is not very good. And now it's like, this Clemson team, what are they, Mitch? I mean, I don't know what to make of this game. I don't think Notre Dame is really that good. Listen, I saw them beat BYU. And BYU had opportunities in that game, even with them playing as badly as they did. And this team lost to Marshall, and then they beat, and then they lose to Stanford, right? And then they beat Notre, and then they beat Clemson, and then they also beat Syracuse, right? I mean, it's like, I don't know what to make of this. I don't know what to make of this Notre Dame team. I don't know what to make of this Clemson team. This was just a confusing game overall for me. That's my takeaway.
Very confusing. But I said this last week about Clemson. Like, I just think they were 8-0, but I didn't feel like they were a top four team. Like, I did not feel that way about them with the confusion of are they going to go with DJ Uiagalelei? Are they going to go with Cade Klubnik? It didn't feel like they really had that settled out. And right now, if I'm Clemson, I know you're only a one loss team, but you're not in the, you're not in the college football playoff right now. DJ hasn't looked good over the last few weeks. I think you just go with Cade Klubnik in the first half of next week and see what the hell happens. If they want to give themselves a shot, maybe they got a better option there. Clemson, super confusing. Notre Dame, really confusing. I mean, it started 0-3. Marcus Freeman looks like he's really turned the corner as far as finding out what he has and establishing a better culture there at Notre Dame. Drew Pine didn't do much of anything in that game. He was 9-for-17. They ran the hell out of the ball, but like they didn't like control the ball a whole heck of a lot. So it's confusing. It's the most confusing top 10 upset by an unranked team I think I've ever seen.
This was a weird one. And, for Clemson, as you said, playoff hopes. The thing is, Mitch, is their playoff hopes are still alive. We'll talk about where they fell in the playoff rankings, but they are 8-1 on the season. They're still undefeated in ACC conference play. They've got a 2-game advantage over Syracuse and NC State, and they have head-to-head win over both of those teams. So they've locked up the Atlantic division. They'll likely play, North Carolina in the ACC championship game, which North Carolina right now is a ranked team and could continue to rise and could potentially even be ranked in the top 10 by the time that comes around if they were to win out. So, you know, let's say number six Clemson beats number nine North Carolina in the ACC championship game, and you're talking about a one-loss Clemson team, the committee will talk themselves into it, right? I don't think this team's very good. I don't think this offense is very good. This defense is legit. Besides, you know, take this Notre Dame out of it. The defense is really good, but this offense has hindered this team all season. I do not believe they're one of the four best teams in college football, but the playoff option is still there for them, despite how bad this loss is. And that's gross, but it's unfortunately true.
Pretty nasty. Pretty nasty.
Mitch, let's move on to our Heisman watch. Update our Heisman rankings. Last week, we had Hendon Hooker, number one, Caleb Williams, C.J. Stroud, Bo Nix, and Max Duggan. That was our top five. This week, an update. Same five, different order. Hendon Hooker remains number one despite the loss to Georgia this past weekend. Caleb Williams remains number two. Max Duggan makes the leap to number three. Bo Nix will stay at number four, and C.J. Stroud going down to number five in our Heisman watch. Mitch, talk the people through what was our thought process behind this flipping Duggan and Stroud here.
TCU still undefeated, massive numbers. C.J. Stroud, to me, like, he just hasn't played exceptionally well over the last couple weeks. You look at who Ohio State has played, they haven't won any really super great games. Like, they got some coming up in Michigan. If they get that done, that'll be a good win for him. But Michigan looks so good, you can't even count that, you know, put that in his box, you know, check that box for him. Duggan's just been more impressive with a program that typically is, though it's not typically, it's every time, doesn't bring in the type of talent that C.J. Stroud has around him. And TCU's just been more impressive and where they're at right now than where Ohio State is right now. And I think that should matter when it comes to voting for this Heisman Trophy. Now, the panel that votes for who wins the Heisman may not see it that way, but at least you and I, Dallin, that's the way we see it. Max Duggan has been more impressive with what he has around him and who he's played than what C.J. Stroud has done.
Yep,
1,000%. And recency bias. I mean, C.J. Stroud hasn't played well. Max Duggan's been fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is C.J. Stroud had like 76 passing yards last week in their win. And it just seems weird to keep him ahead of guys that are having continually really good weeks and big wins and big up, you know. So, yeah, I mean, that's how we're doing the Heisman watch. And if you looked at the odds right now, C.J. Stroud is the favorite to win the Heisman. And he's a pretty clear favorite right now. And we disagree with that. And that's okay. We're going to do a little different. That's why I like doing the week-to-week updates, Mitch, because, you know, that matters. It matters throughout the course of the season.
It does matter. It absolutely
matters.
We're
not predicting who's going to win on a week-to-week basis. We're saying who we'd give it to right now if the season ended today. So, that's right. You know, that's right. How we do it. Mitch, upset of the week, as we mentioned, Notre Dame-Clemson, probably the biggest one. But let's give a shout-out here to Michigan State over Illinois. Illinois ranked number six team in the country. Michigan State entering this game 3-5 on the season. They had the drama around the Michigan game, suspensions coming out of that. I mean, they just having an objectively bad season, and they go on the road at number 16 Illinois and pull off a 23-15 win when everything was going wrong in the season. Illinois was favored by 16 points in this game, Mitch. 16 point favorites. And Michigan State pulls off the 8-point win. Shout out to the Sparties here. That's a big one.
Yeah, especially following all the drama with, you know, the post game stuff with Michigan State. They playing with eight guys suspended. A lot of criticism coming to that organization, to that team, for them to rebound and get a win over a ranked opponent in Illinois, who's a good team. Illinois is a very good team. A very good quality win for the Spartans.
100%. Our player of the week is a pair of players, co-players of the week, Clayton Tune and Tanner Mordecai, the quarterbacks for Houston and SMU, respectively. If you did not catch this, guys, wow. I mean, just go do yourself a favor and go pull up the box score for this game between the Mustangs and the Cougars. 77-63. SMU gets it done. Mitch, it was one of the highest scoring halves. I believe the score, I'm trying to do the math here real quick, 56-35 at halftime. Mm. At halftime, Mitch, what are we even talking about here? That is insane. Tanner Mordecai set a American Athletic Conference record with 9 touchdown passes in the game on 28 completions, which, as you pointed out before we recorded, is like 1 every 3 passes. 1 every 3 completions was a touchdown in the game for Tanner Mordecai, the SMU quarterback. 379 totals for him, 379 yards total for him. A touchdown on the ground also, by the way. So 10 total touchdowns for Tanner Mordecai. Clayton Tune, on the other hand, for Houston, 36-53, 527, 7 touchdowns, 3 picks. He also carried the ball 12 times, 12 of the 17 rushing attempts, by the way, for the Cougars in that game. 12 attempts, 111 yards, and another touchdown on the ground, including a 55-yard run in the game. This is just both these guys just put up incredible performances. Can't give it to one of them. Got to give it to both of them here. Great stuff.
Yeah, I mean, Tanner Mordecai also, you mentioned the AAC record for 9 touchdowns in a game. He also tied an NCAA record by throwing 7 of them in the first half. Look, what is it with Texas Group of 5 schools? They always, like, and this is not, like, this is no bullshit. Texas Group of 5 schools always score like this, at least once or twice a year, it feels like. Where there it's like, final score was, 59-71. Well, where the hell did that come from?
You're out like, of I nowhere. Know it's basketball season, but I didn't think those teams were playing in early November. Right?
Tanner Mordecai put no. I'm trying to even think of a quarterback that would put up those type of numbers. Like that's been a college.
Well, what's this is, Mitch, is if you'll remember a couple years ago, there's this classic matchup between Patrick Mahomes and Baker Mayfield when they were at Texas Tech and Oklahoma, respectively. And if you look at the box scores and the performance those guys put up, it's like the same thing. This is the G5 version of what that was a couple years ago between those two NFL quarterbacks. And just a shootout of all type proportions. Incredible stuff.
Colt Brennan, Case Keenum type numbers coming out of these guys. It's nuts.
Love it. Love it, Mitch. Our best moment play of the week, what I went with, I'm not going to say we because I know you didn't like this, but LSU's decision to go for 2 in overtime, I think, is the best moment in play of the week. That takes a lot of balls to say game's on the line right here. We don't want to go to double overtime. We don't want to extend this out. We want to win it right here. Trust our guys, against Alabama in that situation. Love the call. Pays off for LSU. They get the win. Definitely the best moment of the week.
I mean, definitely not the best moment of the week, but sure, whatever. And you know what they scored on? Run option is what they scored.
Your favorite play.
Yep. Fucking ridiculous, dude. Man, no, fuck your favorite moment. That's not the best moment.
Okay, fine. Best moment for college football, worst moment for Mitch.
There we go. Thank you.
Our college football playoff rankings reaction, Mitch, in lieu of all of the shuffling in those matchups that we mentioned, quite a bit different looking top four this week in the college football playoff rankings. Georgia up to number 1. They jump from 3-1 after the win. Ohio State remains at number 2. Michigan jumps into the top 4 to number 3. And TCU, the Horned Frogs, move up into the top 4. They move up 3 spots. Those are the final 4 remaining undefeated college football teams. So I have no issues. This seems like the most logical top 4. It kind of was like had to play out that way, right? I mean, anything other than this would have just been absurd. So any issues with like the order of the top 4?
Michigan and TCU over Ohio State. I'm still going to stand by that. Ohio State's wins have just not been that impressive. Sure. So,
right.
But no, I don't have a problem with who's in there. All the last 4 undefeated teams, they deserve to be there. Maybe just a small issue with the order, but just big shout out to TCU, man. Yeah. What a year they're putting together. What a good brand move for Texas football if TCU gets into the college football playoff. I mean, we haven't seen successful football programs really to that caliber out of Texas in a long time. So, like, if TCU gets in, great move for Texas football at the collegiate level.
Absolutely. I mean, the Longhorns have not made the college football playoff ever, right? So, right. I mean, TCU would be the first Texas team to do that. I mean, imagine those bragging rights over your rival team that's about to dip out for the SEC in a couple years. You know, I think this is great, obviously, for the Big 12, for the new Big 12, too, right? I mean, if you're bringing in a brand that's losing Texas and Oklahoma, but you can bring in a, hey, TCU was in the college football playoff a couple years ago. Hey, you know, we got all these new guys. Cincinnati was in the college football playoff a couple years ago, right? I mean, that's huge for the new Big 12. And huge for, shout out to Sonny Dykes, former SMU head coach who's in his first year at TCU to take over. You know, TCU is not a perennial contender, right? It's not like this was a program that was consistently at the top of the Big 12 and competing for Big 12 championships before he took over. They were good. Gary Patterson was certainly competent and they were above average, but this is unprecedented for the school and for him to be doing this in his first season, an incredible hire. For TCU here, Sonny Dykes. We'll see if they can continue it. We'll have a game this week that we'll talk about in our picks with them, but one of the best stories this year so far, absolutely, has been the Horned Frogs.
Absolutely. Mitch, the Horned Dogs.
Of course, as they're affectionately known here, the Horned Dogs. The rest of the top 10 comes as follows. Tennessee at number 5, falling from number 1 after the loss. Oregon, number 6. LSU up to number 7. USC, number 8. Bama, number 9, and Clemson, number 10, both those teams falling after their losses. This is where I think I have issues, Mitch. I am curious about these orderings, and I'm curious about UCLA. I don't know why. Can you tell me why UCLA is not ranked in the top 10? I don't know what the reason. UCLA is ranked at number 12. I did not share that with you guys. They're Ole Miss is at number 11, UCLA then at number 12 behind this top 10. But UCLA is one loss on the season. It came on the road at Oregon, who is the number 6 team in the country and clearly really good. They beat Utah, who is the number 13 team in the country. They beat Washington, who is now back in the top 25. Why aren't they in the top 10? Why is Clemson ahead of them? Why is Ole Miss ahead of them? Frankly, why is Alabama ahead of them? Alabama's 2 losses.
Okay. Hear me out. Alabama plays a much tougher schedule. But playing in the SEC is a lot different than playing in the Pac-12. Same thing with LSU. Like, we don't believe really in LSU, but, like, they've played a tougher schedule. So I really think, honestly, if the first team out in that bottom 5 should be Clemson. Like, they haven't been impressed. We talked about how unimpressive really they are outside of their defense. UCLA should be number 10 in this, and Clemson should be outside the top 10, especially after losing to an unranked Notre Dame team.
Yep.
I mean, that, like, they got off easy with only losing 6 spots.
Yeah,
really.
I mean, if
easy.
You compare their losses, right? I mean, Clemson loses to an unranked Notre Dame team who is now in the college football playoff rankings. They're number 20 now. So, okay, you can say the 20th best team. And UCLA lost to the 6th best team. And that's the difference between those 2 teams. I don't understand why UCLA, they should be, in my opinion, they should be right behind USC. You know, if you want to put Bama ahead of USC and UCLA because of the schedule, because their 2 losses came to Tennessee and LSU, like, whatever. We can, you know, consider that. But having Clemson and Ole Miss over UCLA, I don't get that one. Weird to be disrespecting the Bruins at this point. You know, they're desperately looking ahead at that USC game here on November 19th as that last opportunity for both those teams to prove themselves and make a push here in the college football playoff conversation. Because it just seems like listen, I'm not usually a Pac-12 advocate either. And I think everyone else is pretty fairly here. That UCLA seemed just, I don't know, it seemed a little weird to me.
I mean, even if you want to put Bama at 10 and UCLA at 9 and knock Clemson out, I'm right. Okay with that, yeah. You know.
Yeah.
I don't think UCLA is a better team than USC, but, you know, UCLA should get much more consideration than what they're getting. Absolutely.
Yeah, I think at this point they should, so I don't know. We'll see again, and for the Pac-12, that November 19th weekend is going to be huge because you have Utah at Oregon, and you have USC at UCLA that weekend. So that's going to have big implications for the Pac-12 championship game and the college football playoff hopes for that conference.
And that's a tough, I mean, that's a tough run. That's a really tough one run of games for UCLA. So,
yeah. All right, let's go to our games to watch this week, Mitch. We talked about a few of them, but we'll recap where we went last week. Tennessee and Georgia, as mentioned, I picked Georgia. Mitch picked Tennessee. I got a point there. Clemson at Notre Dame. I picked Clemson. Mitch picked Notre Dame. So Mitch gets a point there. Alabama at LSU. We both picked the Crimson Tide, and Mitch unfortunately locked Alabama, so gets negative 1 point there. Oregon State at Washington. I picked Oregon State and I locked them, Mitch. Why do I lock Pac-12 teams?
You got to shape up, son.
I got to stop being so stupid. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm not touching the Pac-12 game this week. By the way, this week, spoiler alert, the Pac-12 game, I'm not fucking touching that shit. I learned my lesson. I'm staying away on the locks there. But yeah, I locked Oregon State. We lost there. Mitch picked Washington, gets the win. So Mitch walks away with a point from last week. I had 0 points, and that puts Mitch in a sound 28-18 lead on our season picks in as we head into week 11. You've basically wrapped this thing up. I mean, you'd have to basically get no picks and negative one every week, and I'd have to win out to really have a shot in this at this point in the season. So it's feeling dire, but I'm not going to stop trying. I'm giving it my all, but you know, I might concede the race. You know what I mean? Like,
a lot can happen in just a few weeks, buddy. A lot can happen.
Fair enough. I like it. All right. Well, let's jump into our picks here. Let's start in the Big 12 with a Texas matchup. As you mentioned, Mitch, we're talking about Texas teams, but number 4 TCU headed on the road to take on the Longhorns, number 18 Texas. And it's a major disrespect for the Horned Frogs on this line. Texas is favored by 7 points at home against the number 4 team in the country. I mean, what is this? College football is synonymous with the brands and overvaluing brands. We see that, we talk about this all the time. I gripe on this forever, but here's another case of this, as Texas is favored by 7 against the number 4 team in the country only because they are Texas and the number 4 team is TCU. If it was number 4 Georgia, they'd be underdogs by 7, right? If it was number 4 anybody else, you know, they'd be underdogs, but it's TCU, so they must not be good. I will digress, Mitch. Get off my soapbox here. Texas, again, favored 7 in this game, over under 65. Mitch, I'm starting here, and I said I'm staying away from the Pac-12. I'm staying away because I'm taking the lock now. Locking the underdog. TCU's getting this done, Mitch, and they're winning this game. Texas is not back. Texas is a good football team, but not a great one. TCU is a great football team. I'm buying in on the Horn Dogs. Let's ride. Taking TCU, I'm locking them.
All righty. Yeah, I would love to lock this game. I just can't lock this game. I can't lock this game. Texas rivalry, going to be a tough matchup, I think, for both teams. But I'm with you. There's no way the Horned Frogs lose this one. I'm going to take TCU at plus 7. I'm taking the under probably in this one. I'm going to probably take the under, because I don't know if they
is the over under. Yeah,
I don't think they hit 65, but I think that, you know, I might be a 2-score game in this one, but I'm not going to lock it just out of security here.
Yeah. No, fair enough. And listen, maybe I've cursed TCU now. If they lose now and their college football playoff hopes are over and we ruin this special season because I had to lock them in my college picks, I will retire from the college picks and never do them again, because I'm doing a disservice to people everywhere. But I don't think it's going to happen.
I don't think you should retire from the college picks. What I think you should do is lose your locking privileges for 1 week.
I like that. You're just not allowed to lock anybody because you're a curse. I love that.
And then just go get 4 points and be happy with it, but you don't get to lock anything.
Stick with my normal picks. The locks are not for me. Too advanced. Yeah. Mitch, let's go to our group of 5 matchup, a top 25 group of 5 matchup. The number 22 UCF Golden Knights, headed to the Bayou, to New Orleans, to take on number 17 Tulane, the Green Tide. Beautiful campus, by the way. Went to New Orleans last year. I wanted to make a point of It's driving around the Tulane campus a bit. Cool old buildings, great setting. Green Wave, though, have an incredible season. Highest ranked group of five team right now in the college football playoff rankings. In fact, those are the only two group of five teams ranked right now, both representing the AAC, future Big 12 member UCF. Tulane favorite at home, -1.5, over under 54.5 points. Mitch, who are you taking in this one?
I love this Tulane team. I really do. Lock me in Tulane -1.5.
I love it. Let's go.
Lock me in at Tulane -1.5 over number 22 UCF. And hell, I'll take the over. I'm going to take the over in this one. I think 54 is a pretty achievable number for both offenses. I like the over and Tulane as a lock.
Oh, man, I love that, Mitch. Yeah, this Tulane team is really fun. I mean, I remember talking about them a couple weeks ago in anticipation of that Tulane-Kansas State matchup. Because Kansas State really high on them, and then they upset Kansas State early in the season, and it was like, whoa, what about this, you know, Tulane team? Are they going to be able to capitalize on that? Lost the very next week against Southern Miss, and it was kind of like, okay, yeah, they're, you know, got to be whatever. But I mean, they've rattled off five straight wins since that loss, Mitch, in the AAC, taking care of business against Houston, Memphis, Tulsa, etc. They've got a tough stretch though to end the season. UCF this week, SMU next week, in the middle of the week, and then wrapping up the season at Cincinnati. So some true tests coming up for the Green Wave. Unfortunately, I'm rolling with the future Big 12 in this one, Mitch. Give me UCF in this one. I think it's going to be a tight game. I think it'll be a close one, but I'm gonna say chaos in the AAC and roll with UCF here.
Okay.
Let's head to the SEC, Mitch, as the Alabama Crimson Tide look to keep their season and their playoff hopes alive on the road at Ole Miss. Number 9, Alabama, at number 11, Ole Miss. It didn't matter last week, but the books in Vegas still favor the Crimson Tide. -12 Alabama favorites in this one, over under 64.5. Listen, obviously neither of us are locking this one, and for a good reason. After last week, probably just, you know, big lines for Alabama. Not a good call. But I am going to roll with the Crimson Tide, Mitch. I am going to roll with Alabama because they're just too talented to lose that many games. You know, Tennessee, really good team. Lose that game on the road? Okay. LSU, really good team. Lose that game on the road? Okay. Ole Miss is a good team. But I don't think they're at the same level of Tennessee. I don't think they're at the same level of LSU. They have some flaws. Now, they can't really stop. They run the ball very well. So if they can have success in the run game in ways that teams have against Alabama, it could be some trouble. But I am trusting Bryce Young in this one. Give me Alabama.
I think it's my trust in Bryce Young that Alabama will get this done, but it's more so my lack of trust in Jackson Dart. I think the Jackson Dart has an absolutely horrendous game. I almost made up a word there. I almost said ferocious. It's horrendous and atrocious at the same time. It's ferocious. Throws for three picks.
Let's use it. I love it.
Yeah. He's going to have a ferocious game. He's going to throw three picks against this Bama defense. Roll damn tide. Give me Alabama. They may cover here, but I'm not going to lock. I said last week I was done being tired of the big spreads. I lied. I'm scared of them again. I'm not taking -12, but I will take Alabama in this one.
Smart man, Mitch. Smart man. Let's go to our Pac-12 matchup, the final of our picks. Number 25, Washington, coming off the upset at home over Oregon State, and they're headed to Eugene and Autzen Stadium to take on number 6, Oregon. Oregon has been red hot since the opening season loss against Georgia, and particularly at home, this Oregon team has been just really, really impressive. And they enter this home matchup here favored -13.5. Over under in this one is 72.5. Mitch, neither of us are picking this. Thank God I'm not locking a Pac-12 game here, but I'll let you make the pick here first. Who are you taking between the Ducks and the Huskies?
Remember how I just said I'm afraid of big spreads? Like, I almost locked this one just to, like, try to continue to try to conquer this fear. Because minus 13.5 in Autzen Stadium is really, really appealing to me, especially against an Oregon team that's been absolutely dominant. I love Michael Penix Jr. He's having a great year. I love Michael Penix. I'm still not totally convinced with the rest of this Washington team. I'm still not 100% convinced. I am 100% convinced with Oregon and how talented they are. I got to take the Ducks in this one. Quack, quack. Ducks at home in Autzen Stadium. Get it done over the Huskies.
Man, Mitch. You know what? Here's the thing. The Pac-12 is always chaos. There's not going to be a playoff team from the Pac-12 this year. They're going to cannibalize themselves. They do it every year. You know, some team is destined to make it, then they trip up a couple times at the end of the season. Their playoff hopes are dashed, and that'll be it. And I think chaos is going to happen, so I'm picking Washington.
Wow. Wow.
I've picked the Huskies. And listen, I'm not locking them, so I don't have to sweat it, because, you know, I just get 0 points if it doesn't happen. But I don't know. I'm thinking Pac-12 chaos, so give me Washington. And I guess, the good news is, if you're an Oregon Ducks fan, is this probably means Oregon's going to win, because my Pac-12 pick sucks. So, you know,
they'll
probably
win.
Oregon by 20.
Now they'll win. They'll be a top five team in the country and get a Rose Bowl berth, and everything will be hunky-dory. So,
and you're welcome. Exactly. So there you go. Great stuff on the picks, Mitch. Let's wrap up the campus tour with our player to know before the NFL draft and to recap the names that we've heard so far, starting with last week. Olu Fashanu, the offensive tackle from Penn State. Hendon Hooker, quarterback, Tennessee. Michael Mayer, tight end, Notre Dame. Joey Porter Jr., cornerback, Penn State. Drew Sanders, linebacker, Arkansas. Bijan Robinson, running back, Texas. Jordan Addison, wide receiver, USC. Bryce Young, quarterback, Alabama. Mitch, this week, our second wide receiver to join the list. And one of the guys that I – one of the names heading into the season at the top of the wide receiver group, right? Not as strong of a class at the wide receiver position as probably we've seen in years past. I think that's fair to say. When you talk about Wilson, Olave, Williams, when you're looking, you know, CeeDee Lamb, Jerry Jeudy, Henry Ruggs, that draft class. I mean, we've had some very, very strong wide receiver draft classes. And we've talked about a wide receiver already in Jordan Addison, who I very much like, and I think he's going to be one of these top guys. But the player to know this week, and a guy who has turned it on after a slow start to the season, is Quentin Johnston, the wide receiver out of TCU. And with the Horned Frogs making the leap up to the top four, and us moving up Max Duggan in the Heisman ranking, it just seemed fair to highlight another guy on this team who's making things happen, and that's this wide receiver, Quentin Johnston, 6'4". 200 plus pounds. He's a big target kind of guy. But what I like about Johnston, and what I think he's continued to prove this season in a really big way for his draft prospect, is that he's not just a red zone big guy, you know, throw it up to him, make it happen sort of player. He's not just that. His break tackle ability is one of the best in the country, just flat out. He has 40 missed tackles coming into the season, Mitch, 40 missed tackles on 89 career receptions. That's an incredible number. And when you have the after the catch ability to break tackles like that at his size, pretty decent speed. He's not going to be great speed, but break tackle ability is one of those stats that translates really well at the next level. It's something that's really looked at in running backs. And you see that translate really well. Javonte Williams was very high in broken tackle rate coming out of college. You saw some running backs in this past draft class doing really well. Ken Walker, one of the highest broken tackle rates coming out of college last year, and he's done really well. When you have that ability at that size, you're going to draw some attention. And right now, PFF has him as their number one wide receiver, number 9 on their big board. So in the top 10 for a wide receiver, but ahead of Jordan Addison, ahead of Jackson Smith and Jigba, and others. And again, in a wide receiver draft class that is not as strong, and we've already talked about Jordan Addison, and Jordan Addison's a different cat. Undersized, more. Addison is more that undersized wide receiver. Really good speed, good hands, runs good routes, you know, more of an Olave, you know, type of player. But Johnston is a break tackle machine with great size, and he's had some big clutch moments and big games for TCU this season and continuing to increase his draft prospects, and certainly going to be one of those first wide receiver names heard in this draft class, and adds a different element than any of the prospects at the, at least at the top of the draft board in this upcoming NFL draft. So that's a player to know for the NFL draft this week. Quentin Johnston, wide receiver, TCU.
Yeah, great size. So you mentioned the break tackle ability, the big play ability. This screams Calvin Ridley to me. Calvin Ridley, when he came out of Alabama, yeah, you know, a good size, but he wasn't going to blow you away really with much, just a good playmaker, a really good playmaker. And that's kind of what this screams to me is, you know, Quentin Johnston might be a Calvin Ridley that maybe doesn't gamble on games. Yeah, you know, I don't know if he likes to gamble or not. But Dallin, since we're talking about TCU wide receivers, that's going to lead us into our college football trivia question of the week. Are you ready?
I am so ready, my friend.
All righty. Very simple question, Dallin. Name the last two TCU wide receivers taken in the first round of the NFL draft.
The last two TCU receivers drafted in the first round. Okay, well, I've got one of them who ended up being a pretty big bust. And at the time, I was actually kind of high. He was a guy with some size. Right? Similar to Johnston, not Johnston has, again, yet after catch ability that this guy didn't have. This was a solely red zone guy, and hopefully Johnston doesn't end up with too many comps to Josh Doxson, because that would be unfortunate for him, because his career with Washington did not turn out that well.
Yep, that's one.
That's one of them. Okay, now the other one, though, this one's going to be a little trickier.
Josh Doxson, by the way, 2016, 22nd overall, yes, to Washington. So
yes, yeah. Mitch, I got nothing. I don't know. I don't have a guess here. I can't even think of. I know it's gonna hit me when you name him, but give me the answer.
You're gonna kick yourself for this one. It is Josh Doxson and Jalen Reagor.
Oh my gosh, Jalen Reagor. That's right.
Who went 21st overall to Philly.
Yeah, when you have such not good careers, I guess it's like hard to remember. But yeah, now a Minnesota Viking, right? Just traded to the team, I think, this in the preseason. But man, oh yeah, Jalen Reagor. There you go.
That was Josh Doxson was not the one I thought you were gonna get. I thought you would get Reagor like that. Funny. Oh, I thought you were gonna snap get Reagor. Yeah.
Yeah, then instead I get the guy that nobody remembers from 2016. There you go. Great. That was good, Mitch. I love that. Jalen Reagor, Josh Doxson. So, you know, Quentin Johnston, I mean, those guys haven't had, I mean, Rager's still playing in the NFL. I don't want to write out his NFL career, but you know, haven't had the best NFL careers, but Johnston is a different cat here. Different cat, and I'll say this now. You can put this on the wall. He's going higher than both of those guys. Guaranteed. Guaranteed Johnston goes top 20. Can we put it on the wall? Can I lock that one on the hill? Yeah, on the hill, the wall, whatever we call it. Sure. I forgot what we called it. Yeah, I want to put that on the hill. Johnston gets drafted before both those TCU guys. You can say top 20 if you want, but he's going before that. And I think he'll have a better career. He's a pretty good player, so.
All right. You got it, buddy.
All right. Love it, Mitch. That's going to do it for the Campus Tour. It's going to do it for the first half of the podcast. Let's take a break and hit a mid-roll. And when we come back, we will do our mid-season awards and our NFL quick picks. So stick around, and we'll be right back. Thanks for checking out the Sports Hour today. We appreciate you wherever you're listening. But if you haven't already, we recommend you check us out and give us a listen on Anchor.
Anchor allows us to provide the best product to you. You can go support the Sports Hour and become a permanent part of the show, like my saint of a mother, Sammy, and my father, David, did.
You can even leave us voice messages with your thoughts and opinions that we can use on the show. Prove to us that you know better than me and Mitchmo.
Moral of the story, people, be more like Sammy and David.
Go find us at anchor.fm/thesportshourguys and become a part of the conversation. What the hell are you waiting for?
Welcome back into the second half of the Sports Hour with Mitch, Mo, and Dallin. Thanks for sticking around for the second half, because we got one of our more highly anticipated segments of the year that we like to do. It is the midway point of the NFL season. And so we got to do our midseason awards, Dallin. Our way too early awards, if you will. We like to do our way too early season predictions. This is kind of that iteration, but for awards, we also have a little bit of some of our own awards that we like to give out as well. For our mid-season review, and as always, we'll round out the show with our quick picks. But Dallin, let's jump right in to our mid-season awards. Been a NFL season full of surprises, twists and turns, things we did not expect, and now we've arrived at the mid-season, and it's time to talk about the best of the best and maybe some of the worst of the worst.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's start it off with the big one with MVP. And you talked about a season with twists and turns. And I think it's fair to say that that is emblematic of this pick right here, the MVP pick that we both have for our midseason awards. And that's Jalen Hurts, the quarterback for the Philadelphia Eagles. And if you would have told me before the season that Jalen Hurts was going to be the MVP favorite at the midseason, I wouldn't have believed you. And listen, we were both high on Philly. You have them going to the Super Bowl. I had them winning the division. Like, we were both high on Philly and how good they would be, but not Jalen Hurts being an MVP candidate or being the MVP favorite. But we are both in agreement here that Jalen Hurts should be the guy. Here's his stats on the season. 68% completion percentage on 239 passing attempts, just over 2,000 passing yards, 12 touchdowns to 2 interceptions. He's added 88 carries for 326 yards and 6 touchdowns on the ground. So an 18 total touchdowns to just 2 interceptions on the season. And Mitch, I think that is that coupled with the fact that they are the lone undefeated team and the best story of the season so far. I looked at a lot of players, and we can get into some of those other candidates, but when it came down to it, it seemed pretty fair to end up at Jalen Hurts. And I don't really think you can, in my opinion, I think if the season ended right now, you would not be able to go any other way.
Yeah, I'm 100% on board with you. I think that, like, the other players that I looked at were like guys like Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen and kind of the usual suspects that we expect to be at the top here now. But, you know, it's the impact that Jalen Hurts has on that Philadelphia offense and that team as a whole, I don't think can be replaced by anyone else. I don't think that there's anyone else in the league other than maybe Lamar Jackson that is able to do what he does. And I don't know. There are questions now. Does Jalen Hurts do what Lamar Jackson does better than what Lamar Jackson does? Like, I think those are questions now that we can ask, given the performance and the success that we've seen in his role in that offense. So there's no question in my mind, an undefeated team with as well as he played, Jalen Hurts has to be at the top of that conversation when it comes to MVP right now.
Yeah, 100%. And I get what you're saying with the Hurts and Lamar thing, but I just think that they are just honestly different. I just think they're very different. I don't think Jalen does what Lamar does at all, but I think he does what he does very well. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they both run the ball a lot, right? That is similar in that, right? Jalen Hurts has 88 carries. Lamar Jackson has 75 carries. Lamar's averaging 7.4 yards per carry. Jalen Hurts is averaging 3.7, right? Half of his amount of yards per carry. Why? Because a lot of the opportunities Jalen Hurts gets is red zone, goal line, third and one, fourth and one, right? The play that we've all seen this year where you motion a tight end or a fullback and you just push the quarterback forward. The Eagles have been doing it all year. That's a lot of the carries that Hurts is getting. He's got 6 touchdowns because of it. He is more of that red zone threat, the way that like a Cam Newton was when it came to running the ball and sort of what he brings to the run game. Lamar is big plays with the feet. And what Jalen Hurts has shown this year, which I think is the most promising and the reason why he is a legitimate MVP candidate and a reason why the Eagles are undefeated, because he's passing the ball at a very high level, 68% completion percentage on the season. He's completing the ball at a high level. He's not turning the ball over, only 2 interceptions. And Lamar is 6th on the season. You know, they're past, you know, 63% for Lamar. So I think that's the difference we've seen in Hurts. And that is why I'm encouraged by Jalen Hurts and what he's doing and what it means for the winning prospects of this team, because he's getting it done with his arm, but he also has the athleticism to get it done with his legs. He hasn't needed to be that guy who needs to run for 100 yards a game for them to win. That's a very good thing for Philly. Hopefully this season they don't get to that point. I'm sure he's capable of doing it, but this team is functioning at a high level because he's efficient on the ground and in the air. And that's why I think he's been most impressive to me. And that's why he's my MVP.
I understand. I guess Lamar does get more designed runs than what Jalen Hurts does. I understand that.
And I get what you're saying with it 100%, but I think they're both doing different things. And I think coming into the season, it felt like Jalen maybe had to be more like Lamar. And I think in a way he's developed into his own thing. To his own style of Jalen Hurts is running offenses in a way that no one else is doing. Right. And I think that that is very impressive for Philly. I do want to talk about a few of the other names. You mentioned Mahomes and Allen, both good records on the season. Both of those guys, 6-2 on the season so far. Mahomes has 2,600 passing yards, leads the NFL, 21 touchdowns, leads the NFL, 66% completion percentage for him. Allen's got 2,400 yards, 19 touchdowns to 8 interceptions. He's also got, 4 touchdowns on the ground. I mean, those guys are going to be in the conversation. The name, though, that I think really should be considered at this point, Mitch, is Tua Tagovailoa. Tua has led the Dolphins as the starter. He is 6-1. He's completing 70% of his passes. He's got 1,900 passing yards, 15 touchdowns, 3 interceptions. I mean, he's 6-1 as a starter. Miami's been one of the best stories of the season. And when he's been on the field, Miami's been virtually unstoppable. And he's been extremely efficient, the most efficient quarterback this year. So if anyone, I think he should be, I'm not saying he should be the favorite. I didn't pick him, but I think he's a name that should be mentioned in this. And especially if they continue to play at this level, I think he should be in that conversation at season's end.
It's tough to give an award to a guy that didn't play the whole year. We saw that with the two games.
Still played in 7. I know. 6-1 as a starter. So I don't think those two games will matter at the end of the season. I just don't.
I know. But we saw that with Tom Brady, Matt Ryan in 2016. When Matt Ryan had a fantastic year. Tom Brady came back after missing 4 games due to a suspension. He comes back. He looks great. And people were talking about trying to give Tom Brady the MVP award. To me, it just doesn't. It's hard for me to give an MVP award for somebody who doesn't play the whole year. It just doesn't.
Well, he missed 2 games. I think compared to missing 2 out of 17 compared to missing 4 out of 16, I think is different. And if you compare Tua and Jalen right now, just statistically, Jalen has 1 more game on Tua, but he's only got 23 more passing attempts. He's only got 140 more passing yards, got 3 less touchdowns. Passing. So,
well, again, they do different things.
But I'm saying statistically, even with less games, numbers are comparable. So he's winning. He's efficient. I think he should be up there. So,
but they do different things. That's my point.
Of course. But Tua is playing at a very high level and they're 6-1 with him as the starter. So, we'll see how the rest of the season plays out, but, definitely the name there. But again, ultimately, I mean, we both ended on Hurts and I don't think there's really another way to go with the way that the season has played out so far. Let's jump to Offensive Player of the Year, where we both were in agreement again on this one. Looking through the numbers here, Mitch, I think there were a couple of names I considered, but I think this easily comes down to Tyreek Hill, Miami wide receiver, 76 catches, 1,104 yards and 3 touchdowns on the season. He's first in receptions, first in yards. Like by a long shot too. I mean, he's like very high in those categories. Tyreek Hill is having an unbelievable start to his Miami Dolphins career and a start to this season. I think he was the easy Offensive Player of the Year for me.
You ate a little crow earlier. I'll eat a little crow now. I did say, I think I gave him the grass isn't always greener superlative at the beginning of the year.
Yeah.
And things have been okay. Things have been really good for Tyreek over in Miami.
It's pretty green in Miami, you're saying, huh?
It's pretty green. They may not be greener than Patrick Mahomes, but it's still pretty green over there. You know, the touchdown numbers are a little bit lower than a lot of the guys that maybe contend for something like this, like a Stephon Diggs, who's so, you know, 60 receptions, 857, but he has the 7 touchdowns.
Right. Tied for first in touchdowns there with 7. So.
Right. And that was another name that came to mind. But I wanted to diversify a little bit when I thought about offensive player of the year, and I went running back. And I know that they're not winning a ton of games right now, but I think he deserves some consideration, at least acknowledgement for what he's doing and keeping this offense afloat. And it's Nick Chubb.
Yeah,
over in Cleveland. I mean, he's been a huge part of why this offense hasn't completely collapsed. Kareem Hunt has been not always there as far as production goes, but he's been the one consistent thing in that offense that has kept them afloat and not completely falling off the cliff with running Jacoby Brissett out there every single week. So I put Nick Chubb in that conversation as well.
Yeah, I that was my number two, and definitely I think the only other serious contender, I think, at least at this point, I think, is Nick Chubb. 149 carries, 841 yards, and 10 touchdowns so far this season, averaging 5.6 yards per carry. He's second in attempts, second in yards behind Derrick Henry, but first in touchdowns with 10. He's the only player at double digits right now. And I think that matters, continuing to prove that he's one of the best running backs in this league, having a great season there for Cleveland, as you said. Even though they've been a bit disappointing. Stephon Diggs was the name I looked at, as you mentioned earlier. He's tied for third in receptions, third in yards, and tied in first in touchdowns. Austin Eckler, though, another name that I mentioned, and the running numbers, you're going to shake your head at 98 rushing attempts, 427 yards, 6 touchdowns, but he's got 60 receptions this season for 381 yards and 4 touchdowns. First among running backs to catch his yards and touchdowns. 60 receptions is as many as Stephon Diggs. Austin Eckler is tied for third in the league in receptions this season. So even though the rushing numbers are not great for Austin Eckler right now, he is having an incredible year as a pass catcher right now for a running back. And I think he deserved maybe a bit of a shout out here.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's basically Christian McCaffrey light is what he is.
He's putting up those types of numbers right now. Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%.
Mitch, let's go to defensive player of the year. I'll let you go first here. Who is your pick here for this award?
Look, I wanted to pick the same guy that you did, but for the sake of being a contrarian, I went in a different direction. We know that the Defensive Player of the Year award is essentially a sacks award. It really has come down to that over the last few years. And right now, Matthew Judon is looking like he is going to be that guy at the top of the year. He's having an incredible year rushing off the edge for New England. I know that winning hasn't really been a consistent thing in New England this year, but 11.5 sacks throughout the first half of the year, that's 3 better than second place right now, which is Nick Bosa. Another name that you could consider in this one, Matthew Judon putting together an incredible year. But quite honestly, Dallin, I like your pick better. I'm going to be completely honest with you, because that's the guy I really wanted to go with. And I think that's the guy that's the more important person in this conversation right now.
Listen, I love that you put Judon, because he was a name that I considered and I was in the same boat as you. I really wanted to pick Judon because I don't think he's going to get the love because he's not a big, but I do think he's a great player. He's not a nobody. He's a very good player, been known for a while, but having a breakout, as you mentioned, with New England, 11.5 sacks, 35 tackles, 3 passes deflected and a forced fumble. But yeah, my pick, Micah Parsons, 8 sacks, 36 tackles, a touchdown this season. He's a star on this Dallas Cowboys team. He's a star in this league, defensive rookie of the year last year, and he seems poised on his way to win a defensive player of the year. And he might be the favorite right now, and the name certainly helps, the recognition that he's garnered himself and the fact that the Cowboys are off to another great start to their season and the defense is looking good.
Yeah, I mean, like I've said multiple times in this podcast, and you've heard it outside of this podcast as well, he's the second coming of LT. I mean, he is the next Lawrence Taylor, and it's showing. It's showing right now. He gets the sack numbers. He plays well off ball, on ball. He stretches out off tackle plays better than anyone in the league. He can go into pass coverage. He's the most versatile defensive player in the league right now, and I like Judon a lot, and I think he should get some recognition, but I honestly think Micah Parsons is the favorite right now for that award.
Yep. I think Parsons, but don't look at, watch out for Nick Bosa, 8.5 sacks, a good Niners team that could make a push of the second half of the season. a known commodity people are very familiar with, one of those rising stars on defense that people would love to reward with a defensive player of the year. So if he continues to have a good, strong second half, you know, I think he's going to be well positioned as well for that.
And, you know, I just another name to throw out there while we're talking about defense, because I know we blew through this one pretty quick. You know, Danielle Hunter had a really big year in Minnesota a few years ago and got some recognition for that. Didn't win defensive player of the year, but another Minnesota edge rusher that's having putting himself to, you know, putting together a really good year for himself is Za'Darius Smith. Yes. And I think that we should be giving him some recognition as well as for the contributions that he's had on a really good Minnesota defense.
Absolutely. That's a great one, Mitch. Let's go to offensive rookie of the year. We'll go to the rookie awards. And I think this one's interesting. There are some wide receivers that have had pretty good seasons, and I want to highlight a few of them because ultimately I think this comes down to a pair of running backs. But those wide receivers, Garrett Wilson leads all rookies with 42 receptions. He has 521 yards and 2 touchdowns. Chris Olave, 37 receptions, a rookie lead of 547 receiving yards, 2 touchdowns. Drake London having 33 receptions, 369 and 2. So those top wide receivers are all producing at a fair level. I think all those teams and fan bases very happy with the rookies and what they've shown out so far, and could be in store for some bigger second halves as they continue to develop roles with their teams. But even though those guys are on pace for, you know, 1,000-yard receiving seasons, good solid seasons, I think this comes down to a pair of running backs, Mitch. But we differed on our picks here, and I love that. So I want to give my case first for my guy Ken Walker, Seattle Seahawks running back. Doesn't have as good a numbers as Damian Pierce in a couple categories, namely carries and yards. 111 carries, 570 yards, but 7 touchdowns for Ken Walker, averaging 5.1 yards per carry. He has just burst on the scene, and the thing is he's not slowing down anytime soon. I think he's going to surpass Damian Pierce by the end of the season in all those categories and be that statistical leader among running backs. And I mean, he's just been explosive for the Seahawks team, and the Seahawks have been one of the best stories of the season. Seems fitting that they'd reward one of their players with this award. So my pick right now, I loved him out of Michigan State. He's been great this year. Ken Walker III for Offensive Rookie of the Year.
Yeah, I mean, you named my guy right there is Damian Pierce. And here's my case for him is Ken Walker's having himself a fantastic rookie year. And I think that shouldn't go unnoticed. But I truly, honestly believe that Damian Pierce is more valuable to that Houston offense than Ken Walker is to the Seattle offense right now. Damian Pierce right now, fifth in the league in rushing yards per game, at 84.8. He's had the big breakout game already. 148 rushing attempts, 678 yards, 3 touchdowns, 4.6 a carry. A guy that is just seems like he's more valuable to his offense right now than Ken Walker is to his. And I think that it's really going to come down to those two. And I you're 100% correct in saying that. I guess it's just a difference of opinion here of, you know, maybe who should get the nod. I would understand both selections, you know, getting that nod at this point.
Well, and up until this point, Damian Pierce has had more volume, and he's certainly taken advantage of that. But Ken Walker, I think, has had more flashes, right? Big runs, couple big games recently. And I think it's kind of the difference there. We'll see how the rest of the season plays out. But both those guys have now, at this point of the season, solidified their starting role, right? Damian Pierce is the guy in Houston with Penny's injury. Ken Walker is the guy in Seattle. So we'll see how the second half plays out for both those guys. But I do want to, you know, Chris Olave, Garrett Wilson, those guys with over 500 yards each on the season, they're on pace for 1,000-yard seasons. They could get to an 8-touchdown mark, 1,100 yards, 8 touchdowns, 70 receptions. That's a very good year for a rookie wide receiver, and those guys could potentially be in the conversation at the end of the year.
And lest we forget, like, I think that the criteria that a wide receiver needs to get this award at the end of the year has been completely reset thanks to Ja'Marr Chase. I mean, just like,
and Justin Jefferson the year before.
And Justin Jefferson. Yeah. Like it's absolutely been completely reset. Point. Like they're gonna have great seasons, but like that benchmark's been reset of what that's supposed to look like. And let's not forget, I don't think we'd be talking about Damian Pierce and Ken Walker right now had Breece Hall not gotten hurt because of the pace that he
absolutely
was on. So absolutely. Like, let's let's give Dameon Pierce and Ken Walker all the credit in the world for what they're contributing to this team. But like, I mean, I hate to say it and being a little bit of, you know, being a little bit of a downer here, but they definitely got a boost when Breece Hall went down. I mean, absolutely.
Absolutely. Or else it would be a three-headed race right now between all those guys. And maybe Hall would be the favorite because, yes, he was certainly on a great pace. And sucks that he had the injury that he had. But we'll see if he gets some play at the season's end. Let's run to the Defensive Rookie of the Year, Mitch. And I'll let you go first here with your pick, because you got your guy. This is your guy. You've loved this guy. You've stamped your name on this guy. He is your guy, and he's proven well for you. He's your pick for Defensive Rookie of the Year.
Yeah, I mean, I've been a Sauce Gardner guy since pre-draft. Like that was my guy. He has continued to be this guy. 9 games, 2 interceptions, 19 yards on each of those receptions. We look at the defensive snaps that he's played, and he's playing 89 to 100% of each of every, you know, he's playing almost every snap this year right now. Guys are starting to figure out, quarterbacks are starting to figure out right now, don't throw to that side of the field. And when they're figuring that out in this guy's rookie year, like, he's a problem. He's a problem already. Yeah. And if you can get guys that, this is one of the weirdest awards, is that like, you could get the lowest stat line possible and you're going to win Defensive Rookie of the Year. And it's because people are afraid to go to your side. People are afraid to go your direction. And Sauce Gardner's doing that right now. A fantastic rookie year for my guy Sauce, man. He's cooking. He's cooking out there.
Yeah. Yeah. They're cooking right there in New York. 44 tackles, 2 interceptions, a league leading 13 pass deflections for Sauce Gardner. You're seeing that size and that length, the aggressiveness, and as you said, teams are very much learning. This kid is one of the best corners in the league right now as a rookie, proving why nobody threw at him at Cincinnati for a reason with what he's doing there for the Jets. I'm going to go with a different corner here, though, Mitch, because I want to give this guy a shout out. One of the most intriguing prospects headed into this last NFL draft out of UTSA, Tariq Woolen, right? 6'4", big. So fast, running in the 4.2s or 4.3s, I believe. And where was he going to go? How high was he going to go? I mean, there were even talks leading up to the draft, like late first round, people were going to get enticed. He fell all the way to the 5th. And who takes him? Of course, the Seattle Seahawks, because they've seen this before. They drafted Richard Sherman in the 6th round, right? Or 5th round. They knew. They've seen this guy before. Oh, we know what to do with him. And Tariq Woolen has been all that. 4 interceptions, 8 passes deflected, 31 tackles for Tariq Woolen. And I mean, he looks like a young Richard Sherman. Like, I hate to do it to the kid. I mean, it's like unfair, but I mean, he's proving, listen, he's still a prospect. He's not Sauce Gardner, but he is proving to be well worth that 5th round pick, well worth the hype. And alongside Kobe Bryant, Sauce's former teammate in Cincinnati, who is on the opposite corner there for Seattle, that young pairing of corners is looking really good for Seattle as they try to rebuild the Legion of Boom and suddenly seem like they've stumbled upon some great corners on the outside there in Tariq Woolen and Kobe Bryant. So shout out to Kobe Bryant there, who's also having a great season. But I wanted to give a shout out to Tariq Woolen because he won't win the award by the end of the season, even if the interception numbers are better, because Sauce is a better player and he deserves it. But wanted to give him a shout out here.
I mean, he had a 4-game stretch of having an interception each of those games. One of those included a pick 6. So, yeah. He's, like you said, with Kobe Bryant on the other side, maybe a little bit of Legion of Boom 2.0 to rebuild that thing. I know they need the safeties. They can't go out without Browner and Chancellor. They need something else up there.
Quandre Diggs is great, but, yeah, you know, maybe not Earl Thomas status, but, you know, at least it's decent, but... Yeah, certainly things looking up for Seattle. Mitch, let's jump to our biggest surprise. Speaking of Seattle, they've been certainly one of the biggest surprises. I'll let you go first here. Who'd you pick for the biggest surprises here?
I mean, we talked about them earlier. It's the Philadelphia Eagles. I mean, I thought this team would be good, but man, not 8-0. They've absolutely outperformed expectations. 2-game lead right now on the Cowboys, and they show no signs of slowing down. Dominant on the offensive side, dominant on the defensive side. In fact, they've only allowed 2 more points the entire year than the Dallas Cowboys, who we talk about having an elite level defense. The Eagles defense has been almost just as stout, and the offense to complement it. That the Eagles are, to me, you know, I I'm not surprised that they're winning games. I'm surprised that they're winning this much.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, it's right. It's not a surprise that the Eagles are good. It's a surprise that the Eagles are this good, that they are best team in the NFL good. You know, absolutely. I think that's fair. I chose another NFC East team, Mitch, but I'm going to go with the New York Giants. I have never been high on the Giants, and I will remain never high on the Giants. I don't know what it is. It's just not. And Brian Daboll may change that. Certainly changing it this season for the G-men in New York, who started the season off 6-2. And I think what's been most impressive, Mitch, is the defense. Wink Martindale, coming from the Baltimore Ravens, where he spent so much time as the DC there and did a great job. Brian Daboll bringing in Martindale was the best move he made in his young head coaching career. Bringing in Wink Martindale to take care of this defense, who I anticipated to be like the worst in the whole league. They don't have a lot of talent. They simply don't. They haven't invested a lot on the defense. They don't have a ton of talent on the defense. They have some young players, but the expectations on this defense were not high. And this defense has turned out to be really pretty freaking good. They have the fourth least amount of points allowed in the NFC this season, behind those two teams we were just talking about, Dallas and Philly. So when you're getting compared to defenses like that, you're doing a pretty good job, and that's what's been best about New York. The offense is still sus. Brian Daboll is getting the absolute maximum out of the offense this season, but the defense is a difference maker, and that has been the biggest surprise for me.
Santa's little helper, Wink Martindale, is absolutely doing what he was brought on to do, which was lead a good defense and build a good defense. I do want to add a fun Giants stat here. 7-1-score games that they've had this year, they're 6-1 in those games. I mean, they're just locking down when they need to lock down, and that's what's most impressive about this Giants team.
Yeah, absolutely. Biggest disappointment, Mitch, I'll go first here, and this one was easy for me. There have been quite a few disappointments this year. A lot of options for this one, honestly, but Los Angeles Rams, Mitch. I picked the Rams to go to the Super Bowl. I picked the Rams to repeat as NFC champions and go to the Super Bowl because the talent was there, and they re-upped, and they didn't bring back everybody, right? It was going to be a little bit different. Sean McVay was there. Aaron Donald was back. Cooper Kupp was there. Matt Stafford. I was like, all right, let's do it. NFC's weak. You know, I knew the Rams weren't great. I knew the Rams weren't world beaters this season. But with how weak the NFC was and questions about a lot of the other contenders, as have been proven correct, I thought maybe this was a chance for the Rams to really make a difference. But 3-5 start on the season. They've scored 131 points through 8 games, Mitch. Only the Pittsburgh Steelers have scored less points this season in the NFL. The Sean McVay and Cooper Kupp and Matthew Stafford and this incredible offensive machine that we've seen for all these years has scored the second least amount of points in the NFL this season. What's a bigger disappointment than that? I don't know.
There's not a whole lot that is a bigger disappointment than that, Dallin. Look, you know your offense is in trouble when the Bears have outscored your offense by 56 points. And we talk about how bad the Bears offense is, and they've had a few good weeks in a row, but like you're still getting outscored by the Chicago Bears. You're getting outscored by the Detroit Lions. You're getting outscored by the struggling Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
The Houston Texans are outscoring the Rams. I mean,
It's not good. It's not good.
They've
in LA
got a
right
Brontosaurus
now
playing quarterback for them. I mean, that's just ridiculous.
I mean, if the Rams don't make the playoffs at this point, I'm not surprised. That's how bad they are.
Yeah. 100%.
Like given the circumstances, I'm not surprised if they don't make it. They're bad right now.
It's a bad spot. Mitch, who's your biggest disappointment this year?
Kind of in the same vein as you, as a team that we expected to be great, and we're excited about the offense, it's the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're 4-5, 106. They're actually leading the division technically because they have the win over the Falcons, but they've been outscored over the course of the season. Tom Brady has not looked like Tom Brady as well, and as he has in the past. I know they've been banged up. You know, they've had guys exit and come back and then exit again, and the run game's been inconsistent. But like, look, what did you expect out of a 45-year-old quarterback that's going through a divorce? I mean, what did you expect out of the guy? I mean, his mind's clearly not in football. Todd Bowles has not managed the offensive side of the ball well from a head coach standpoint. And this team's in serious trouble of losing this division if they don't get things turned around really, really quick. The Buccaneers have been a real big disappointment. I mean, I think a lot of people would have said they lost five games all year, and right now we're at the halfway point, and they're already at that mark.
Yeah, under 500. And, you know, I think the losses along the offensive line in the offseason, Ryan Jensen, Alex Kappa, I mean, Jensen came back and then he got injured, so, you know, he was a non-factor this year. They lost pieces along this offensive line, and they've regressed along the offensive line in a lot of ways. Donovan Smith at right tackle has been downright awful. This run game is non-existent, a large result of that, and a large result of playoff Lenny getting paid and getting rewarded and now being a little less motivated to work as hard, and a 45-year-old man going through a divorce at quarterback, and all of a sudden you have the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in 2022. And maybe we should have saw that coming a bit more with the turnover. I mean, the injuries along the pass catchers and some of the things they've dealt with certainly haven't helped. But yeah, the Bucs, I mean, nobody would have expected them to be under 500 halfway through the season. Not in the NFC South. No. Not with the teams they get to compete against, you know. Absolutely not. Mitch, best moment. Maybe this is mean. I didn't know what to go here. I put a question mark next to it. But I said Tom Brady's divorce. I don't know. That's mean. I don't want to say that. I don't know what the best moment was. I couldn't come up with something. I think that's the best story from a just entertainment perspective. Not like I'm rooting for it.
I mean, look, it's captivated non-football fans. I mean, yeah. Like, everyone's talking about it, and you know, I wouldn't say it's best moment. It's maybe the most awkward moment of the year was.
I like that.
It was just a weird thing, man. You know, giving him an ultimatum. It's football or us. And then even the weirder thing, he chose football over his family, like, right. Which was even weirder.
Yes,
it's made me question some character flaws in Tom Brady. Maybe I you know, I don't. Yeah, I read an article about it, whether it's from Fox Sports or ESPN or CBS or Barstool or wherever. And I just feel awkward every time I'm reading it, because I'm like, I feel cringe. Like I'm getting into I'm getting into someone's personal life that I shouldn't be getting into. Like that type of feeling. And it's
a conversation with somebody and they start oversharing a bit about their relationship. And you're like, homie, I was just trying to be nice. I don't need to know why you're sleeping on the couch for the next week. You know, we don't need
that feeling.
We don't need to be here.
It's that feeling of being at your friend's house and your friend and a parent gets in an argument.
Oh, yes.
And you're just like, oh, God, I'm going to go in the other room. Like,
how do I sneak out of here without anyone noticing?
Oh, it's a bad feeling, man. Oh, man.
Oh, man. Hilarious. Mitch, what was the best moment for you so far this season?
Oh, I take a lot of joy in this one. It was the Packers losing five straight. It's the Packers losing five straight.
You can just say the Packers' downfall in general has been the best moment for you.
Well, no, this last weekend was especially special to me because they lost the Lions. Historically bad defense. They put 9 points up on a historically bad defense. This is great. The Bears are tied with the Packers in the division right now. If the Bears finish second in the division over the Packers, I'll run around the town naked. I'll be so happy. I mean,
don't get arrested.
Maybe not naked, but I will
underwear and a Ditka jersey and we can do it.
Perfect. Perfect. I will scream from the mountaintops with how happy I am if the Bears finish second over the Packers. Because, look, here's the deal. I hate the Packers. I know I went to bat for Aaron Rodgers a couple weeks. Yeah, it's a known fact. I hate Aaron Rodgers, the Rat King. I hate the Rat people that are there in any way associated with the Packers. I know I went to bat for Aaron Rodgers because I had to put biases aside. But this makes me happy. It makes me happy that the Packers are losing. So.
Yeah, I get it. And honestly, when you said that the Bears and Packers were tied at record with 3-6, I did not know that. And that shook me. It shook me to hear that.
Yeah, it's a good feeling. It's a good feeling knowing that we're probably better than the Packers. We're probably better than the Packers.
Oh, that feels weird. All right, Mitch, let's move on as I process that. Best storyline of the season. I got to go with this because I found this stat very fascinating. Saw this last week on Twitter. The average final score margin of the final score in the NFL this season is the lowest through week 9 of any NFL season since 1970. Since the merger. The average final score margin this season is 9.43 points per game. And I think that coincides with the trend that I felt this season is that it feels like games are closer than ever this season. It feels like parity is stronger than ever in the league this year. And we're seeing it with certain records. We're seeing it with divisions that are very competitive. We're seeing it with margin of victory. 72 games this season have been decided by 7 points or fewer. That's the most in NFL history through 9 weeks of the season. So this is clearly one of the most competitive seasons of the NFL that we've seen up until this point. And I love it. It's been awesome. It's been a breath of fresh air, a change of pace to see the Bucks and the Packers and the Rams struggle, to see teams like the Giants and the Vikings and, you know, the Jets and all these different teams having success, the Seahawks. It's been very fun. It's been very fun.
I think that kind of ties into what we talked about a month ago when we talked about how few undefeated teams there were left.
Yep.
And we were like, man, there's always seems like there's more than this than there have been in previous years. And we found that to be true. You found that to be true. I want to give you credit there for your homework. You found that to be true. There were fewer undefeated teams at that point of the year than there have ever been. And we're seeing that now. We have one undefeated team. It still feels like we should have two or three at this point of the year. And we're with one. And like you said, parity has been kind of the story of this NFL season, how we see these struggling clubs that have struggled for years and years, finally have putting together successful seasons, the guys that we expect to be towards the top struggling. And that's a very interesting statistic to bring up and definitely something that's been a huge storyline through the NFL. So,
yeah. What's your pick for best storyline this year?
And how bad the NFC South is. I mean, we talked about maybe two potential, one for sure, another potential playoff team coming into this year, coming out of this division. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers, we just talked about them under 500. The New Orleans Saints, we talked about, a lot of people did, potentially getting in as a wild card. You know, a comeback of Jameis, Alvin Kamara going to put together MVP, Offensive Player of the Year type numbers, and maybe a resurgence of Michael Thomas. And we haven't seen any of that. None of that's happened. We knew the Panthers were going to struggle. We didn't think the Falcons would win, be in the position that they are now, where they're tied for the division lead. We're in a situation where the NFC South, where I probably would have put this on the AFC South.
Yeah.
But I'm putting it on the NFC South as the worst division is in football right now. And that's definitely not where I thought I'd be.
Only division with all four teams under 500. And I think you said it right. We would have said before the season, AFC South, right? Easy, right? Titans, Colts, the best teams. Come on. I mean, you know, that's definitely got to be the worst division, but it's definitely been the NFC South. And I think it is very likely that we do not have a team with a winning record win this division. I think it's very likely that 8-9 wins this division this year, whether it is the Bucks at 8-9 or perhaps somebody else. But NFC South, I thought the Falcons would be bad, but I thought Panthers could be sort of competitive. You thought in the wild card mix, you locked in the Bucks, but yeah, you're right. Certainly one of the weirder turn of events, I guess, this season.
Yeah, I mean, you think about it. You just said a division winner could be 8-9. They'd have to be over 500 for the rest of the year, either the Falcons or the Buccaneers to go 8-9. And the Saints, Panthers are probably not going to do that, but like we're going to have to see some like
actual good football,
actual good football at the NFC South, man. And I'm not putting any one of those past the wild card round right now.
No, absolutely not. No way. Mitch, to wrap this up, Midseason awards. Let's look ahead. We've looked back at the first half of the season so far. Final one here. Let's look ahead. Bold prediction for the second half of the season. I'll let you go first, my friend.
So I talked about at nauseam almost at the beginning of this year how this was the Bills division to lose. Like there's no one that can compete with the Buffalo Bills. That this is their division to lose. 14-3, 15-2, whatever I had them at. Like this is going to be the best team in football. 14-3, there it is. That's not the case anymore, because we look at the Jets, we look at the Dolphins, the Patriots are somehow 5-4, which I don't know how with the struggles they've gone through are 5-4. But we look at the Dolphins, we look at the Jets, and they're hanging around town. So my bold prediction for the second half of the season is that on week 18, the Bills and Jets will be tied for the division lead going into week 18.
Wow.
I think we're going to see two 11-5 teams going in to week 18. One's winding up 11-6, one's winding up 12-5.
I love that. And I also love that it's the Jets and not like Miami, because, you know, the Dolphins right there too. They could certainly be in the mix, but I love this, Mitch, because the Jets, I want to talk about New York for a second, because we haven't talked about them. They are one of the surprises. We anticipated a better season for the Jets, right? You said 6-11. I said 7-10. We thought best case scenario, you know, 8 wins, maybe 9. Maybe they're flirting with the wild card and we can be like, ooh, here we go. And here they are at 6-3 with a defense that continues to improve week in and week out. That may be by the end of the season, one of the best defenses in the league. An offense with a young quarterback who is still struggling at times, but figuring it out. They clearly have better offensive weapons around him, and that is certainly helping. And I'm kind of in on this. Like, why can't the Jets continue to compete? Especially when you consider, Mitch, they have one of the easiest schedules on the second half of the season. One of the easiest remaining schedules in the NFL second half of the season. So not only have they helped themselves out in the first half, but the second half lends itself to them being in this position towards season's end.
Yeah, I feel like the Jets have gone from a floor of being like improved but still not great to a ceiling of they're frisky. Yeah. Now I feel like the floor is they're frisky and the ceiling is, wow, they could contend for a division title. Like that's where I'm at with them right now. They're looking that good. And all the credit to the front office and making the right moves, drafting exceptionally well over the last couple of years. And Robert Saleh, let's not forget about him. He's done a great job coaching this team.
100%. I mean, they're building the right way. This is exactly what you hoped to see this year. I mean, the only thing that could have been the icing on the cake is Zach Wilson came out looking like, you know, Patrick Mahomes or something like that. And he is not, but he is improved. And I think with realistic expectations, this is as best as you could have expected for New York to start the season. 6-3, you know, looking as good as they had, you know, without Zach Wilson and winning games with Joe Flacco. I mean, yeah, it's pretty good. So love that, Mitch. My bold prediction for the second half of the season is that a first year AFC West head coach will be fired at the end of the season. A first year AFC West head coach is not making it out of the offseason with his job intact. And I'm referring to two guys specifically, obviously, Nathaniel Hackett and Josh McDaniels. Hackett in the Broncos, 3-5. Josh McDaniels in the Raiders, 2-6. And it just feels like with both those teams making big investments in the offseason, making moves for talent, and it underperforming and them not competing in this division, expectations are going to be high. And, you know, if the Raiders win 4 or 5 games, the Broncos win 4 or 5 games this season, neither of those guys should probably hold on to their job with the talent around them and the expectations there. So that's my bold prediction. One of those guys not keeping their job at the end of the season.
I like that. I like that. You think about, you know, you mentioned the investments that these teams have made to build offensive juggernauts. And look, I'll stamp my claim right now that Josh McDaniels won't be that guy. It'll be Nathaniel Hackett.
I'm saying the opposite.
Okay.
It's going to be McDaniels. I'm telling you, it's going to be McDaniels. I love it.
And the reason the reason I say Hackett is, like, he has all this young talent in the wide receiver core. He had a good young running back in Javonte Williams, who unfortunately went down with an injury. Speedy recovery for him, hopefully. He had a good defense. And then he was given Russell Wilson, a bona fide proven winner. And he can't go out and win with them. He just can't. And I don't think that this is of any, I think that Russell Wilson has some fault in that. I think that he has actually a good part of the fault in that. Like, his decision-making has been absolutely terrible this year. He can't seem to get the ball out of his hands quick enough. But Nathaniel Hackett was a guy that worked with Aaron Rodgers. He has experience with elite level quarterbacks, and you get an elite level quarterback in Denver. You don't have to work with Drew Lock. You don't have to work with Teddy Bridgewater. Now you get to work with Russell freaking Wilson, and you can't get the job done. Like, that's more disappointing than to me than Josh McDaniels coming to Las Vegas and working with Derek Carr. We know what Derek Carr is. He's a good NFL quarterback that goes through struggles and sometimes has a hard time, but we've known that, and that's been consistent with every head coach that he's had, and eventually those wrinkles have been worked out. I think if John Gruden hadn't been a dirtbag and he was still in Las Vegas, things would be a lot different in Las Vegas. Nathaniel Hackett had the elite talent coming right to him, fell right in his lap, and he's done nothing with it so far. And so that's where I'm at with Nathaniel Hackett on that. But
sure, I think that's fair. I will say, though, Mitch, I disagree with you because I think, one, Hackett is a first-time head coach. Benefit of the doubt for going through this the first time. Josh McDaniels has been a head coach before, failed spectacularly in Denver, accepted a head coaching job, and then revoked it with Indianapolis. So he's already a marked man, right? He's already been a failure as a head coach. But you gave him a second shot in Vegas, right? And you brought in Devontae Adams, and you said, this is going to work. We need to compete. And this guy with previous head coach experience and all that is going to do it. And if he wins 5 games in year one and goes 5-12, how do you justify bringing him back and saying, this time it's going to work? It didn't work in Denver. It didn't work first season here, but, like, it's going to work next season, we promise. I think that's much more grounds to be fired. With Nathaniel Hackett, you could say, new quarterback in a new system. Russell Wilson's great, but he's never played anywhere than Seattle. It's all new here. Nathaniel Hackett's new. Everything's new. New owners, it's fine. We'll give it another year. So I do think both of them are definitely going to be on the hot seat and certainly need to improve by the end of this season. But I do feel strongly that maybe both these guys may not be holding on to their jobs come, second week of January once the season is over. But we shall certainly see. Mitch, that does it for our midseason picks. Love that. We'll get to look back on this in January, February, and see how wrong we were last year, looking at some of our picks. Stafford and Kyler Murray were MVP picks last year. I mean, just saying that, I mean, there you go, right? That says it all. Just how sometimes these midseason picks can, we got to try. We love it. That's why we do it. Mitch, to wrap up a podcast with our quick picks. Last week, we both went 8-5 in our picks. So stay in put. Mitch 79-58-1 on the season. I am 73-64-1, trailing by 6. But we continue the battle here. Midseason point, 6 game difference.
That's nothing.
We're staying tight. Yeah, I mean, this is
six game lead is nothing at this point. We know that very, very well, because I think I had a 12 game lead or something like that at this point of the year last year, and you closed that right in and wound up winning. So.
That is true. You never know with the picks. A lot of time to go. And let's not waste any time and start off here with Thursday night football. Mitch, my Carolina Panthers with the new black helmets unveiled for the first time. And I want to say this now. I don't ever want to see the silver helmets ever again. Put them shits in storage on Thursday. We don't need to see them ever again. We have our new helmet. Keep the black helmets forevermore after this game. I never want to see another helmet on the Panthers, but I digress. Black helmets, all black look for the Panthers on Thursday night as they host division rival Atlanta Falcons. These two teams played just 2 weeks ago in a thriller overtime. That's the PJ Walker touchdown pass to DJ Moore, takes off his helmet, overtime win for the Falcons. Should be another great game in Carolina, but I am going to roll with the Falcons in this one, mainly because the Panthers made a horrible decision, or maybe a great decision this week, by deciding to start PJ Walker, who was absolutely awful in the first half against Cincinnati. They brought in Baker in the second half, who's back healthy and he looks better, but they're starting PJ Walker on Thursday night, Mitch, and the reason why they're starting PJ Walker is because we are tanking for the top pick in the draft. So of course you'd put out PJ Walker because it gives you a better chance of losing, and I kind of love that. So I'm picking the Atlanta Falcons and hashtag tank for Bryce Young.
Dallin, I got two words for you, and it's not rise up, it's keep pounding. Give me the Carolina Panthers in this one at home over the Atlanta Falcons, leaving Hotlanta. I like the Falcons in this one, or I like the Panthers in this one. Get a little bit of a momentum boost. Steve Wilkes, his next week at the helm, maybe get a little bit of a confidence boost, get another dub here. I don't think they're the 2-win team, and I think they have a good opportunity to get win number 3 this week. Give me the Panthers in this one. Following that game, Dallin, let's head over to Munich, Germany.
What?
Deutschland. That's where we're headed. Where's the Seattle Seahawks will be taking on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Yeah. I don't know. That's like switch.
I wasn't even going to attempt a German accent at all. So good on you for just trying it out.
Yeah, it was very junior varsity level accent there. Seahawks headed over to Munich with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They're going to be battling over there in Germany. Tampa Bay thinks, man, they're just not going well. Give me the 6-3 Seahawks to get win number 7. I think this team will travel well. I know they got a shorter distance to travel or a longer distance to travel, but I think they'll travel well over to Munich and get this thing done over the struggling Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Give me the Hawks.
Yeah, first NFL game ever played in Germany, and man, what a travel day that must have been for the Seahawks, flying from Seattle all the way across the continental United States, across the Atlantic Ocean to Germany. Holy cow. Better have some good audio books or podcasts for the plane ride over, but I'm going to go with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in this one, Mitch, because Tom Brady led a signature Tom Brady drive at the end of that game against the Rams on Sunday. Touchdown winning drive at the end of it to get a much needed win for that Bucs team. And although I'm not high on their prospects throughout the rest of the season, I do think that that is a positive momentum builder. You could see a clear emotional, physical change in Brady after that game. Way more positive, way more energetic. I think that bodes well for Tampa moving forward. So I'm going to pick the Bucs in Germany to get this one done over Seattle. Mitch, jump into the Sunday morning slate. And your Chicago Bears are hosting the Fighting Dan Campbells, the Detroit Lions, coming off of the big win over the Packers. Give me Detroit, Motown baby, to get the win in Chicago.
That is the grossest pick that I think that we could have possibly had down. The Bears' offense has looked fantastic. They're playing a historically bad Detroit Lions defense. Give me the Bears. Bear Don, give me the Bears at home in Soldier Field over Detroit. Are you kidding me? You got to be crazy. You think I'm not taking my Bears? I got to take them.
You know, a historically bad defense that gave up 9 points to a Hall of Fame quarterback in Aaron Rodgers. So, you know, I don't know. Maybe they're onto something.
Don't you do that. You know that's wrong. You know that's wrong and you know it. Don't be that guy. Following that game, Cleveland. They're leaving the state of Ohio to head down to Miami to take on the Miami Dolphins. Give me the Fins in this one. I like the Fins with a healthy Tua, a Tyreek that's been on a tear, all the deals that they made at the trade deadline. We're going to start to see that really, really come in handy for them down the stretch, I think. I like Miami in this one over Cleveland.
Yeah, when Tua has been the quarterback of this team, this offense has basically been unstoppable. And they've really been able to put up points. I think they're going to do much of the same at home on Sunday. I'm with you. Give me the Dolphins getting it done over the Browns. Following that game, Mitch, Russell Wilson and the Denver Broncos headed to the Music City to take on the Tennessee Titans. Is it Malik Willis again? Is Ryan Tannehill healthy enough to play in this game? I think that matters. As great as the run game could be for Tennessee, that's a vaunted Denver defense that will be ready. Give me Denver taking some momentum after the London win, getting another win on the books. Denver on the road.
I'm going to have to disagree with you in this one. I think it's going to be very tightly contested, but I'm going to take Tennessee in a slight victory, a 23-20 type victory. Good defense on both sides, but Derrick Henry's still a monster, and we've seen him prove that. Bouncing back and putting together yet another fantastic season, averaging 108 yards a game. He's leading the league in rushing. Give me Tennessee in this one, in a ground assault by the Tennessee Titans. Following that game, Dallin, probably game of the week, probably the best game that we're going to have all week. Minnesota, they're leaving Minneapolis to head over to upstate New York to take on the Buffalo Bills. This should be a really, really good one, a really fun game to watch. I think it's going to be two teams with good defenses, but the offenses really shine here, and I think that we're going to have a great offensive game. But I'm going to take Buffalo and a one-score advantage. I like the Bills at home to get this done over the Vikings.
Yeah, a very intriguing matchup, Mitch, with the 7-1 Vikings here, who I think have their best opportunity this season at a prove-it win, right? 7-1, they lost to the Eagles in Week 2. They don't really have many notable wins on the season against really competitive teams. They beat the Dolphins, but I think that was with Skylar Thompson at the time. Not even two in that game, so this is the first big test for our Vikings team, who started the season with a very good record. Who are the Vikings? I think we'll know a lot more about them after this game. I'm going with Buffalo in this one, but I do expect the Vikings to compete. I do expect Minnesota to be competitive. Kirk Cousins Josh Allen may not play in this game. There's questions about whether he'll be available. Case Keenum could play. Obviously, that'd be a factor, but, you know, Case getting a win over the former team, you know, there's some narrative to help that too. So either way, fantastic game here, as you mentioned, but I'm going to roll with the Bills this one.
What a narrative that would be if there was a last-second touchdown pass Case Keenum to Stephon Diggs against the Vikings.
To beat the Vikings? I'm ready for it. That's all I'm saying. I'm ready for it. Mitch, following that, the Houston Texans leaving the state of Texas, the Lone Star State, to head up to New Jersey to take on the New York Giants, the G-Men. Hot start to the season. Houston, not so much, but I'm rolling with the Texans. Give me the Brontosaurus. Give me Damian Pierce. I told you I don't believe in the Giants. They got to start losing games eventually. Houston shocks them here with the win.
Not a chance. G-Men. G-Men get this done over the Texans. Not even close. Following that game, Jacksonville. The Jaguars, they're leaving the swamps of Jacksonville to head over to Kansas City, home of some good barbecue, by the way, to take on the Kansas City Chiefs in Arrowhead. Tough place to play. Jacksonville been hot and cold. Don't know what to read of this team. I think that they're just a team still has a lot of building to do. Chiefs well established. Patrick Mahomes lights them up. Give me the Chiefs in this one.
Yeah, would love to see, you know, maybe a bit of a shootout between Lawrence and Mahomes here, right? That could be fun, and I think this Jags team certainly capable of keeping it interesting, but unlike the three-game start to the season, the Jags are clearly a team that has some young talent, but building towards something, and that is okay for this franchise. They're going to lose this one, though. Give me Kansas City at home to wrap up the Sunday morning.
By the way, my fancy start of the week, by the way, Travis Etienne against the Kansas City Chiefs defense. Make sure you start Travis Etienne. Love that one. So
Etienne's been big, and he's come on late, especially in the passing game, as well as the rushing game. Yeah, great pairing there with Lawrence and Etienne. That should be all kinds of fun for fantasy in that one, I bet. I could see some high scoring, you know, and then that Jacksonville-Kansas City game. To wrap up the Sunday morning slate, Mitch, New Orleans, they're leaving the Big Easy, and they're headed up to the Steel City to take on the Pittsburgh Steelers. I am with you on this one, my friend.
Garbage game of the week?
Definitely garbage game of the week. Let's hear it.
This is just hot garbage. Straight hot garbage. You're a garbage person.
Yeah, I mean, we got Andy Dalton versus Kenny Pickett. New Orleans been a disappointing team this season. Pittsburgh is in a new era, a rebuild, investing in youth. But I'm going to go with Kenny Pickett and the Steelers in this one at home. Give me Kenny Pickett and the Steelers. Let's go.
Yeah, I actually don't feel good about this pick at all, but I'm rolling with New Orleans. I think that this is going to be a – whatever the over-under is, hammer the under. I know life's too short. Life's too short to bet the under, but don't lose your money and gamble responsibly. Take the under here. This is going to be a low-scoring affair. I'll take Dalton in like a 17-16 win. I mean, this is going to be a close, really crappy game to watch. I don't advise you tuning into this one.
Yeah, no. Pittsburgh Steelers have the worst point differential in the NFL, -77. The next closest team is the Texans at -50.
Yikes. Not good.
And I not picked good. So I don't know why I shared that, but there you go.
Yeah, I'm not sure why you did that, but whatever, man. Afternoon slate is going to kick off with Indianapolis. They're leaving the state of Indiana to head over to Sin City to take on the Las Vegas Raiders. Raiders, rebound game. I like it. Get it done. New head coach, Jeff Saturday, a prove-it game. Can he lead a team to victory? I'm not banking on it. Give me Vegas at home. A team that's actually played much better at home than on the road. 2-1 at home, 0-5 on the road. I like Vegas in this game.
Yeah, I mean, I would never feel good picking a 2-win Raiders team, but like I cannot pick a guy who's never coached a game at the NFL or collegiate level who's doing it for the first time on Sunday. I refuse. Good luck to Jeff Saturday and the Colts, but I am rolling with the Raiders in this one. Mitch, NFC West matchup, the Arizona Cardinals leaving the state of Arizona, the desert, headed across more desert to another desert in LA, take on the Rams. Speaking of deserts, it's been a desolate season for both of these teams. 3 wins each, and they both desperately need a win here to turn around the season. And I'm going to take the Rams in this one because I trust the Rams to do that over the Arizona Cardinals. Simply enough, backs against the wall. Both these teams need a win. I'm going to say the Rams will do it in an ugly, close game.
Yeah, I'm taking the Rams in the City of Angels. It's got to happen. No faith in this Arizona team. Just not a whole lot of faith in anything that they do. Give me the Rams. Final game of the afternoon slate, Dallin. The Dallas Cowboys, they're leaving Jerry World to head up to Lambeau Field to take on the Green Bay Packers. You know, I talk bad a lot about the Cowboys, and I hate how much I hate the Green Bay Packers. And this feels like the Packers can't possibly lose 6 games in a row, right? They can't lose 6 games in a row. There's no way that Aaron Rodgers is going to let the Packers lose 6 games in a row. There just seems like no way. He's too great of a quarterback. But how about them Cowboys? Give me the Dallas Cowboys in this one on the road in Lambeau. Give me the Cowboys to win this game over the Packers. Let's go for 6 in a row, baby. Give them a 6-pack of losses.
Yeah, I'm rolling with Dallas as well, Mitch. It feels weird. Something kept drawing me to, like, you got to pick the Packers. But the Packers suck.
They stink.
And they should bench Aaron Rodgers. I stand by that. I just want to say, a couple weeks ago, I made that statement, and I got some shit. I'm just saying, talk to me now. You know? What good is playing Aaron Rodgers every week and losing? Might as well play Jordan Love and lose every week. Then you know what you got. That's all I'm saying. All right. I'm rolling with Dallas, though. 6 in a row for Green Bay here. Tough stretch here. Sunday night football, Mitch. Los Angeles Chargers headed up the coast to San Francisco to take on the 49ers. This is a good matchup. A sneaky good matchup. And the Niners, yeah. 4-4 on the season. They're still, alive in this NFC West race, but they certainly need to get some wins on their under their belt to have a shot here. So I'm gonna pick the Niners at home in this one. Chargers been very up and down this season. A lot of injuries, a lot of question marks. Hard to say what team is showing up week after week. So at home, I'm rolling with San Francisco.
Yeah, I'm doing the same thing. It really is a shot in the dark. I mean, really a 50-50 coin flip. They're 4-4. Like, we don't know who we get week in and week out. I'm trusting that they can get it done against the Chargers, though. I love that defense. And at home, that defense always seems to step up and play exceptionally well. Give me the 49ers in this one against the Chargers on Sunday Night Football. Dallin, wrapping up this week's slate of games, Monday Night Football. The Washington Commanders are leaving the nation's capital to head over to the City of Brotherly Love to take on the Philadelphia Eagles. Fly, Eagles, fly. Give me the Eagles. Go to 9-0. Get it done over a very win over the Commanders in a very, very winnable game.
Yeah, you know, I do think the Commanders might be sneaky competitive in this game. 4-5 on the season. I think Washington has been a pleasant surprise this year. Did not anticipate them to be doing as well as they are, but a tough task to go to Lincoln Financial Field and take on the Eagles there on the road. I am rolling with the Eagles in this one to continue the undefeated start to the season and get one done on Monday night. Fly, Eagles, fly.
There you go.
That's what we got. That's it for the quick picks, Mitch. That's going to do it for the podcast, folks. We appreciate you sticking around, listening, as always, as you do. If you don't already, check out the socials. The Twitter is at Sports Hour Guys, Instagram at The Sports Hour Guys, the TikTok at The Sports Hour Guys. You can also follow me on Twitter at Dallin Graff. The website, thesportshourguys.wordpress.com. Check it out if you haven't already. Mitch, remind the people about Anchor.
Anchor is the only place that you can become a permanent part of this conversation. Get on anchor.fm/thesportshourguys and leave us a voice message. We want to hear from you. We want you guys to be engaged with the conversations that we have here on the podcast. If you have a question about anything, go ahead, get on anchor.fm/thesportshourguys. Leave us a voice message. We'll play it right here live on the show and answer your questions. You can listen to this podcast wherever you get your podcasts. That's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher. Wherever you look us up, you will find the Sports Hour Guys. Go on Apple Podcasts, leave us a rating review. Tell us that we suck, because Dallin, that is the only way that we can get better.
Are you saying that you can find us on OnlyFans?
Maybe for feet stuff, I would open a.
I'm not aware that we had an account, but you said if you look us up anywhere, you will find us. So I'm just.
Oh, well, anywhere that you listen to your podcast.
Okay, cool. Okay. I just.
I just say that I would do a feet only and a feet
you
only.
You kind of did. You did kind of say that. And I just wanted to make sure you weren't secretly putting out content as the Sports Hour on OnlyFans behind my back. And I was.
Did we just find our punishment for the quick picks?
Oh, God. No, wait. I'm down in the quick picks.
Loser has to open fans? Loser has to post feet pics on OnlyFans?
Yikes. I kind of like that. I don't know. Let us know what you think of that wherever you find us, including on OnlyFans. But I love that. Feet pics, man. Could be a hot business. Man, we might convert the podcast over. If that starts taking off, we'll be like, guys, sorry, podcast is over. We are fully on the feet pic train now. So.
No one wants to see my feet. I guarantee you that. Like, there's nothing attractive about my feet.
Oh, man. And on that glorious, beautiful note, we shall end this podcast with you guys thinking about our nasty ass toes. So again, thank you guys for listening and hanging out every week as you do. We really do appreciate it. We wouldn't do this without you and making this content every week for the listeners. So until next time, we love you. We appreciate you. And we will catch you next week.
See ya!